Hoga Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon. This is The Beat. Adam Hoge, Mark Carmen here, and sitting in with us today, Kevin Powell.
Yeah, I heard Jared's name in the open there. I'm sorry to disappoint, but Jared is not in the studio. I'll be filling it for him.
No, we go from Jared Payton to Kevin Powell.
Just a couple of primetime athletes.
Don't downplay yourself.
I'm not.
You did something somewhere. I don't know what
it
was.
All conference, man. All conference in high school, right?
In what?
In football.
Chess?
He literally was an all-conference football player.
Okay.
KP and I have done overnight shows today together, Adam. We've bonded.
Practically co-host.
Speaking of bonding, that's what we hope to do by 7 o'clock today. We'll get that done. We got a good show for you. Do you guys see this 85 Bears documentary that's coming out?
I'm so excited.
I'm really excited to talk about this.
It's really good.
I thought it's really well done because we've all, look, I'm 26. Obviously, I wasn't alive for it. But there's something about this team that a 26-year-old who grew up in Chicago still can love the team. You still know about the team. You hear stories. You watch highlights. You hear about this team over and over again. So you do feel something with the team, even though you weren't alive for it. So
I gotta be the old man on the one. How old were you? When were you born?
89. Great year.
1989. Mm-hmm. So you were -3 mm-hmm. when they won it in 86 because it was January of 86, right?
Yeah.
And you're claiming that you have a feeling about that 85 Bears team. That's amazing. That's incredible. That
you don't think that everyone in Chicago has some sort of
see for me,
yeah, well, how,
love what, for that team? Absolutely. We never stop hearing about them.
But see, that's where I was going to say is like it's almost
I feel like you're
it's almost like for me there's an annoyance about it.
How? Why?
Because it's just constantly, oh, yeah, this team 30 years ago
okay,
when they haven't won anything
right,
since.
I know where you're going with this, but then you watch this documentary.
Well, that's my point.
You're like, this team deserves all of that. They're badass.
Yes.
Yeah, but you were -3. It means nothing to you. Zero zippo, yet you're trying to latch on, which is actually just...
I'm not trying to latch on. It's just how it is.
You're making a massive attempt to latch on to the only thing that's ever good that's happened to the Bears, outside of, I guess, 2006 when they went to the Super Bowl. Rob Hart, are you offended because you're the only person in this genre who's around my nearly dead age?
I was 5 years old, 5 and a half, I should say, when the Bears won the Super Bowl in 1986.
You're younger than me?
Well, we're kind of like in the same area.
Terrible. I was not. I was 11.
Well, Carmen, you and I were both born, I believe, during the run of the original Star Wars trilogy. Is that correct?
I mean, I was born in 1973, Rob. That actually makes me 12 when this happened. I just gave myself a year. I was like nearly middle age when the Bears won the Super Bowl.
Oh, then you got to really appreciate it and experience all the sports joy. I didn't quite totally get it at the time. But I understand why it's such a big deal, because that team was a heck of a lot of fun. And I do have the cynicism about the 85 Bears, because they just get, you get clobbered over the head with them over and over and over and over and over again. But then you watch the documentary, you watch the Super Bowl shuffle. I even, when I get bored, and this goes to show you how exciting my life is, when I get bored, I will watch the CBS Sports intro to the NFC title game, where Pat Summerall is talking about somewhere in the horizon, Papa Bear is enjoying this too, and you just get chills. I mean, it just like finds some way to worm its way into your brain. I don't know how they do it.
312-981-7200. Let's relive it. The entire show, 85 Bears, right now. Nothing else is going on in sports.
Well,
go Bears!
312-981-7200.
So for someone like myself, Carm, I can't like this team?
No.
I can't appreciate
it. Well, you can, but like... You can't, like, identify with it.
Obviously, I can't identify with that, but I'm saying I still like the team. They're enjoyable. They're characters on the team.
I'm actually unclear what my rules are for you. I have to think about it. Okay. I'm working on it, though. I'm working through it as we speak.
You know what's cool, though? I have this, there's this one baby video of mine, okay? Because there's not much video from, like, 1986.
They found some good stuff, though, for this 30 for 30.
But, so there's this video of me crawling around, and it's taken the day of the next Bears game, the following fall, right? So it's like the first game of the season in 1986.
Yes. And they're like September 6, 1986, the day of my bar mitzvah. I invited 70 kids, 20 showed up because they all wanted to watch the Bears. Go ahead. Well, not to bring up bad memories.
Now we know where the hatred's coming from.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez.
Yeah, it was awful.
Hold a grudge.
Imagine you're a 13-year-old kid. You're having a bar mitzvah. You got all your friends coming, and no one shows. That stays with you for a lifetime. Go ahead.
If you're going to argue that you have this deep connection with the 85 Bears, and then you're holding your bar mitzvah during the next Bears game in the following fall.
Yeah, that's a rookie scheduling move.
Yeah, what are you doing?
It was game one of the next season. Who cares? It's opening week, and you can't plan these things out.
Who cares?
Well, listen, you know, Fred and Gladys Carmen, we're not thinking
along
the lines of
that. There's 16 Bears games a year.
Hey,
you can't schedule anything during those games.
That's rookie scheduling.
I don't generally like when my family's attacked, but on this one, I think you have grounds and you can continue. Go ahead.
Thank you. Anyway, so there's this baby video. Maybe I can even tweet it out. I'm crawling around, and in the background, there's a television. And on the television is like Walter Payton, and they're honoring the Bears, and it's that first. It's pretty cool. So that's my only connection, basically, to the 85 Bears, because I wasn't alive. I was born in April, like 3 months after the game.
So that's nice, though. That's actually very cool that you have that.
So for,
I have none of those videos.
For your rules, for people like myself who are 26 years, I can't like this team. Is that what we decided moving forward?
Well, my biggest problem with people like you is really not in the Bears realm. It's like people that like claim to know Jordan but don't remember the first three titles. Those guys, like you can't even like.
Sorry, we're not as old as
you. I'm not sure Kevin remembers the first three titles.
I don't, absolutely.
There's
not.
There's no way. No chance.
And those are like my first memories.
The first three titles?
Yeah, like I remember them beating the Lakers and
Carm
Blazers.
Can't even remember
and really,
that long
it was the third one against the Suns where I really start to have vivid memories of John Paxson going off. What was that game?
Game six,
right? Was that the triple overtime game?
Johnny Pax hit the game winner in game six against the Suns in 93. Pax went off, though, in game one against the, or in game five against the Lakers when they won their first
title. What was the triple overtime game, though?
Triple overtime.
Against the Suns, right?
That was game three, but that was not a John Paxson moment. That was just a terrible loss. And then Charles Barkley went crazy. Stacey King had an awful pass right to Barkley underneath the hoop. Not that I remember it. Or was arrested at Game 4 trying to sneak into Chicago Stadium. None of that. All that happened.
We're learning a lot about Mark
Carm.
Yeah,
last time
we
did the show together, Carm, you told me about the story of getting arrested.
Yeah, got arrested Game 4.
So we may have to revisit that.
Jordan had 55. I was in the clink with my girlfriend at the time. It was great. She was in a separate clink. Men and women are separated.
They didn't let you in there together.
No, her mom was not thrilled when I came out and she saw me.
Well, here's,
hello.
Here's why we are we're living in the past here with the 85 Bears. They have a documentary. If you've heard of the 30 for 30 series that ESPN does, it's one of the few great things that ESPN still does, in my opinion. But most of these 30 for 30s are fantastic. Mm-hmm. And this one is no exception. It's really good. It's called The 85 Bears. It's directed by Jason Hare, who also did The Fab Five. And he's going to join us right after the 3:30 news here in about 15, 20 minutes. We'll talk to him. We'll talk to him about the documentary, which comes out on Thursday on ESPN. I got a chance to screen it. I think, Kevin, you saw it as well. Very good. I watched it last night. And we'll talk to him all about that. Also coming up on the show today, we will we'll talk about this Cam Newton stuff with the Super Bowl approaching. It seems to be the big storyline this week.
A lot of people commenting on it. Ron Rivera's commented on it. The whole, why do people hate Cam Newton? I think it's pretty clear why they don't like him. It's because he's a very large, incredibly talented African-American gentleman who expresses his emotion for all to see, and people just don't like to see that. I think it also adds on to it that he plays in Carolina. Not saying that, it's just a little bit different down south. Not that that's completely, Mississippi 1960s territory, but...
Well, I was in Alabama this week.
How was that, by the way, Mr. Senior Bowl?
It was fun. It was good. I like going down there every year.
Was it actually fun, Hogue?
Yeah. No, I like it a lot. You guys know how much draft coverage I do, and this is like the one opportunity where you can talk to these kids. Even the combine, where they're available, it's just a nightmare.
Are you gonna do a mock draft? Because that's what any sort of football analysis reporter All they do now in the off season, it's like 47 mock drafts that they post.
Cool. Well, I thank you for diminishing what I will be doing.
I'm not diminishing.
Yes, a Tuesday. Tuesday
I'm just saying,
after
amongst,
the Super Bowl.
Amongst all of these mock drafts, I'm only interested in Hogue.
Hogue has multiple mock drafts, Kevin. He's got
four.
I mean,
but they're bear centric.
And
not,
you have to pay for Mel Kiper, so I'm gonna. Just
yeah, mine's
here.
Free. WGNRadio.com. It's always free.
312-981-7200. The text line. If you want to direct Adam on how he'll do his first mock draft, things that you have interest in, and also responding to the 847, how many hours to bond out, Carm? I was in there for about 3 hours, and I had a great time, and learned a lot about humanity in jail at Game 4 of the 1993 NBA Finals. Hi.
You're unbelievable.
You're a rebel. You're a rebel, Carm. Just getting arrested in parking
lots. Arrested. Did you get arrested during 1985?
No, but I did beg Papa Fred to take me to Game 1, 1985. The Bears beat the Bucks 38-28. We sat in the family section, no alcohol. Fred packed up some corned beef sandwiches for me and him, and we mowed corned beef on rye and saw the Bears beat the Bucks. Win number one on the way to 15-1 in a Super Bowl championship. Yes, sir.
312-981-7200. We're talking 85 Bears.
Memories.
Do you still connect with them? Are you annoyed by them? Do you just want them to go away and have a new Super Bowl champion Bears? Because that's the other issue here, is it's been 30 years. 30 mm-hmm. years. And as Dave Ennett brought up on Friday when I was talking to you guys on the Steve Cochran show, how many years was it before, in between the...
22, I believe?
Yeah, between...
63 was their last NFL championship.
Right. So... That felt like a long time. Right. And this is 30 years.
It's been a while. And how many playoff appearances over the last 8 years, Adam?
Just remember 1908. One. 1908 is worse rather than 1985. Like, way worse.
So you're excusing the other teams?
Not excusing, but just pointing out that it all, can always be worse. That's all.
312-981-7200. We'll keep this conversation going. And again, we talked to Jason Hare, the director of the 30 for 30, hashtag 85 Bears. Story coming up next. 720 WGN.
McMahon fakes the
hand. He's open.
Fires the right side.
Oh, there he goes.
Hey. William Perry on a 4-yard touchdown reception, and the Bears are on the board.
That darn idea was going to go in motion, but I didn't know he was going to go in the pass. Well, I thought he was going to go down and curl in, but he ran in motion.
Boy, is that going to make the Packers mad or what? I mean, good grief. Yeah, they're a little quiet now.
This is beautiful.
All right, so that's some great audio from 1985. We're trying to figure out even who's all in the booth. It's Larrivee, Butkus.
Well, Wayne Larrivee, the greatest play-by-play guy to ever do the Bears. No disrespect to Jeff, who's absolutely phenomenal, but Wayne was... in a class by himself, I would say.
And now he does the Packers.
Dick Butkus, who was incredibly unique and amazing. Who else is in there? I feel like Rob Hart might know. Do you know?
That would be Jim Hart.
Jim Hart.
Former St. Louis Cardinals quarterback. And that was a fortuitous pickup for GM that year in 85. That was their first year with the Bears. They took him away from the folks up the dial, and that was the first year of the contract to go to the Super Bowl.
And Mr. Cat in the locker room?
Is that where Mr. Cat was?
Yeah, post-game. He was telling me about it yesterday. Says it was quite the experience with that crew.
The documentary goes into some of the shenanigans that went on Super Bowl week. That's one of the things, and we can talk to Jason Hare about it. It is amazing to me how they knew they were going to win. They acted like they were going to win. I think even Dan Hampton says in the documentary that, like, if there was any team they overlooked that year, it was the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and they still demolished them.
He told me that 2 days before the Super Bowl, he was bench pressing 700 pounds.
Hamp?
Yeah, just a mere 700, which, by the way, I tend to believe Hamp on everything he says, and that one I believe more than anything he's ever said. 312-981-7200. Let's relive our lives and relive the 85 Bears. Barbara in Hanover Park, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Barbara.
Hello,
Barbara.
Hi, I just want to tell a little story.
Tell us, Barbara.
Well, my son was 10 months old when this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
The Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
This is a great story so far, Barbara. Barbara, you're on the air.
I know I am.
Okay.
We love you, Barbara.
All right, your son's 10 months old, and what happened?
And then I had a Bears sweatshirt for him and the pants, sweat-up pants.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband comes home at our old house, and he says, you never guess who I saw. I said, what? It was Kevin Butler.
Oh,
wow.
In a lawn chair, waiting for a friend to come home. And I said, cool, take this picture of him and get it signed. And he did.
That's awesome, Barbara. Appreciate the phone call. Love Kevin Butler. Hashtag Kevin Butler.
Phenomenal kicker.
Hashtag six.
He made an appearance in 30 for 30, 85 Bears.
Hey, Barbara.
I love Barbara.
Barbara had it going on. She was doing what she was doing. Ron, Orland Park, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to make a couple of quick points. I've been listening to various radio shows, WGN and through the media, about this whole reunion and how it's overkill. And I just wanted to make one point that a lot of people don't really know or hear about. I have some friends, college friends, that came to Illinois for college, and of course they moved back to Wisconsin, and of course I even have some relatives that moved up to Wisconsin. But here's the thing. The Packer fans did the same thing for many, many years before they won the Super Bowl in the 90s. What year was that, 96 or whatever it was? They reminisced about the good old days. I guess it's just human nature. I guess the thing that I'm trying to say is that everybody, it's like a criticism of Bears fans of Chicago that we should stop already. No, it's just human nature. It's just the way it is, you know, and I bet other cities do the same thing.
It was a good time, and you relive it. You talk about the stories.
I don't personally do that. I mean, I don't, you know, but I'm just saying is that it's almost where the media is saying, attacking Bears fans, well, already stop enough. No, you know, don't stop. That's just human nature.
We feel you, Ron. And listen, in my sports world, if I could just go back and watch every year of Jordan basketball, if I could just start in 84 and go through the whole career rather than watching the current version, I think I might sign up for that. I certainly would like to re-experience it. You know, that doesn't work that right, right? It just happens once. You can't go back and do it again.
Yeah, Carm, the way you relive all the Bulls glory days and you're giving people crap for enjoying the 85 Bears team.
When did I give anyone crap?
You told Kevin Powell he can't enjoy
the team.
You
said I have to hate the 85 Bears.
Listen, Barbara and Hanover Park lived it. Powell in WGN Studios was not living
it. Barbara's husband saw Kevin Butler. She didn't exactly live it, but
sitting in a lawn chair, waiting for somebody to come home.
Barbara's lived well. Barbara's getting after it right now, and she loved the 85 Bears and her husband and the kid in the Butler jersey. I think, was that what the story was? I missed it a little bit.
It was a little bit of a confusing story. If you're still looking for the perfect Valentine's spot, tune in and take notes, because it's an all new episode of Chicago's Best Date Night, Chicago's Best Sunday Night at 10 on WGN TV. We'll take a time out, get a check of the news, and joining us after the news, Jason Hare, the director of the 85 Bears documentary that we've been talking about. It's 720 WGN.
20 seconds remaining now. Mike Ditka being hoisted on the shoulders of his team. 13, 10 seconds, 9, 8, 7, 6,
buddy,
5,
buddy Ryan too, coach.
4, 3, 2, 1. Believe it, the dream is reality. The Chicago Bears are world champions of football.
That was 30 years ago. Only 30 years, guys.
Story is a good story.
That's right. But speaking of great stories, there is a very good documentary. It's called The 85 Bears, done by 30 for 30. They always do a great job, and it's directed by Emmy Award winner Jason Hare, who also did the Fab Five documentary, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. Jason, I had a chance to watch this last night. Very well done. Really enjoyed it. Let's start with just what your connection is to the 85 Bears, why you wanted to be a part of this, and how it all came together.
I was 9 years old when they were at their height in 85 and 86, what you just played. So that's always been, in my mind, the iconic team of my youth. When I think back to the teams that I remember the most, I was from Boston. I am from Boston. But still, they resonated throughout the country. So that's I always thought it'd be cool to tell that story. And when the anniversary came up, it worked out.
Jason, we're talking about this throughout the entire show, in the last half hour as well. And I'm 26, obviously wasn't alive for it, but you hear so many stories about this team. Over and over again, you hear stories from the practice field, from games, from off the field, about the players. They're all characters. Going into this and making it throughout the process, did you learn anything about this team you didn't know before, and what was it?
Well, I had read, I think there's like 14 books that have been written at this point on the team, written, you know, autobiographies and such, and I'd read all of those and did all the research, and then we had thousands of pages of transcripts to go through once we completed all of our interviews. I think the thing that I learned the most was how impressed I was with how intelligent and how thoughtful these guys were. Mm-hmm. You know, you take a character like Mongo McMichael, yeah, who was just kind of a larger-than-life, kind of the comic relief of the team, and you don't expect him to be one of the guys who's making some of the more insightful comments in the entire film, but sure enough, he was.
Yeah, and Mongo said in there that he said they almost tried to sucker people in to think they were less intelligent than their opponents. Uh-huh. He mentioned that in there. So, yeah, I thought Mongo was one of the more entertaining guys in this film.
Yeah, he was. I mean, Mike Singletary, I knew how intense a competitor he was, and I knew that he was not the comic relief of the team. He was quite the opposite. His reputation is, you know, stern and very intense. And what I found him to be, too, though, was really thoughtful and really intelligent. And some of the just how open and candid he was with some of the moments in the interview provided some of the more, I hope, moving moments of the doc.
And Jason, speaking of moving moments, the Buddy Ryan stuff really kind of takes the center stage in this and really brings it all together. You know, I know from just writing some of the pieces I write on the web, you never know how a story is going to kind of come together, what the hook is, really meat of it is going to be sometimes when you start setting out on a project. Knowing what you knew about this team going into it, did you kind of know that the Buddy Ryan stuff was going to become such a big part of it and really bring everything together, or did that just sort of evolve as you started putting the film together?
It evolved pretty organically because Dan Hampton and Ken Valvisieri, Ken was the PR director for the team back then, and Dan Hampton, of course, the Hall of Fame lineman. Dan, once we did his interview, I mentioned to Dan that it would have been great, you know, if Buddy were in a condition to participate in the film. And he made a call down to the farm where Buddy lives and talked to his caretaker, and we just kind of brainstormed ways that we could get his participation. I certainly didn't set out to have Buddy be the beginning, middle, and end of the movie, but we had such a great interview with Coach Ditka, and he was so giving of his time and of his thoughts. You know, we got to really kind of break down early in the film just how it was that he came to be the coach of the team and just how important his time as coach of that team was to the development of the 85 guys. So we tried as much as we could to even out the importance that Buddy had as well.
Jason, one thing I found interesting, and by the way, you're listening to The Beat. I'm Mark Carman. He's Adam Hoge. He's Kevin Powell. It's 720 WGN talking to Emmy Award winner Jason Hare, who did the 85 Bears, the 30 for 30, coming up February the 4th. You can watch it. These guys didn't want to talk to you originally. You had to convince them, correct? They were sick of the story and they didn't know the angle. Is that accurate?
I think that's pretty accurate. I don't know the exact reasons why. I just think that the recent media narrative, probably more so outside of Chicago, has been, you know, these poor Bears, the rise and the fall of the 85 Bears. And I think that a lot of these guys weren't interested in furthering that narrative whatsoever. So especially when a guy that they've never heard of, who lives in New York, grew up in Boston, when they hear that he is going to do this, then they probably rightfully think, oh, here we go again. They're going to just try and dredge up the more depressing stuff and not tell the story in full. So it took a lot of doing. That was probably the most difficult part of the entire project because we agreed on this thing about 2 years ago, and it wasn't until July that we really started getting people on board to do interviews. So it did take some prodding, but I cannot say enough about how cooperative the guys were and just how willing they were to participate in the whole process.
So speaking of that, what kind of feedback have you gotten from those of you that from those players and Ditka or whoever that you talk to now that they've seen it and kind of see how it all came together?
Well, a lot of the guys were at the premiere the other night, and they attended the reception afterwards. So I got to speak with a lot of them briefly, and people seemed to be, you know, pretty positive about it. I didn't get to really sit there and break down the film with any of the guys. I will say that McMahon was there, and I haven't seen McMahon that happy in all of my dealings with him. Now, I'm not saying that it's due to the movie, but he was just in a wonderful mood. I think that part of that I discussed with Mac was that we portrayed his story, I think, pretty accurately, which is that he is having these problems. They do still resonate as a result of his playing style and his playing days, but that he's making an effort to get them under control, and that he's found these doctors who are helping alleviate some of the pain that he's been suffering. So instead of just saying, oh, you know what, he can't find his way home, and he's, you know, a lot of people just think that Jim is a vegetable, and that's just not the case whatsoever.
Well, how would you say his mind is?
I think he's still sharp as a tack. He's very funny. He's very, if you're sitting here right now talking to him in my living room, at least, you wouldn't be able to tell anything. He does, you know, every 3 or 4 months, that spinal fluid that we discussed in the film does build up in his head, and he has to get this neck procedure done to drain that fluid from his head, and that's a result of some severe neck injuries that he suffered over the course of his career. But on a day-to-day basis, you know, the symptoms are they come and go, but he certainly is not the guy that he's been painted to be in some other stories.
Jason, I just to real quickly again touch on the Buddy Ryan stuff, and I'm not trying to spoil anything, but the way the film starts, it's caught me off guard in a good way. I thought it was a phenomenal way to start it. So the Buddy Ryan stuff in there really was some compelling stuff. I also thought the way all the players talk about Walter Payton almost the same way, the respect they have for him, they all said best football player of all time. And thirdly, the thing that stood out, I just love some of the film you guys found from just the practices and some of that just regular day interaction they had in the classroom and on the field and seeing that stuff. Where were you guys able to get some of that footage? Did you work with the Bears on that?
The Bears helped. We got a lot of help from NFL Films. A lot of that classroom stuff is old NFL film stuff that they obtained over the course of, you know, decades of their covering all of these teams. ESPN was at a lot of the practices, especially in 85. That a lot of the first act of the film, the first 30 minutes, contains practice footage from the preseason in 85. And that's because the Bears was such a big story in the NFL at that point. They had come so close the previous season, missing their quarterback. And now that they had a healthy Jim McMahon, they had a healthy Walter Payton back, they had these guys who have been drafted in the years prior who are now veterans in the league, and they were, by many people's estimation, odds-on favorites to win the title. So we just probably had an hour and a half worth of footage of just them, B-roll of them at practice. So that helped immensely as well.
Jason, you mentioned some of the maybe the reluctance early on for some people to talk, and I'm curious how much didn't make the film, because there's obviously interviews and things like that end up getting cut out, and then were there still some guys that in the end wouldn't talk at all? Because I did notice that, you know, there wasn't a Tom Thayer in there, just for one example, and I'm sure you know there was probably some other guys too that were kind of left out.
We didn't get any no's, and I feel terrible about anyone who feels like they were left out. That's why it was good to see some of the guys who weren't featured in the doc at the reception the other night, so that I could personally go up to them and say that there's nothing personal whatsoever. We just had such a wealth of storytellers in that thing. The characters who we did get, we got 11 or 12 of the guys, and they were so good at recounting all of the points that we needed to hit. You know, the Keith Van Horns and the Tom Thayers. You know, we did longer interviews with a lot of the guys, and they were in there for like a bite or two. Matt Tsui, we sat down with for 2 hours, but he was only in there briefly. So it really makes me feel terrible if anyone feels like they get short shrift or their role is diminished. That's one of the reasons why we show the whole roster in the closing moments of the film. We do a pan down of all the names of the starters on the team, because I don't want any one of them to feel overlooked. But we didn't get any no's.
That's good.
I talked to Matsui. He's very angry at you. I'm kidding. I'm sure. Matsui's the most easygoing guy ever. He's Jason, I'm sure they understand. And you had, you know, a million guys to talk to. If you, not to single anybody out, but I'll ask it this way as we let you go here. Favorite guy that you ended up talking to?
Man, that's a tough race. It's tough to overlook Mongo, man. He's a pretty entertaining guy. There was not one guy who disappointed me in the interview they gave or the insight that they gave. Mike Ditka, meeting him is like meeting a statue, and he could not. I've never met someone who is held in higher regard who has more time for the people who come up to him. I mean, it's got to be exhausting for him on a day in, day out basis, just that every minute, everywhere he goes, to be approached by old people, young people in between. And I've never seen a guy of that stature have so much patience for people. It's like you're the first one to see him the entire day every time you go up to him. So really up and down. I hate to say there were no bad experiences. I know that doesn't sell any papers, but I really, really enjoyed meeting all these guys.
We're not trying to sell papers. We're trying to just do good, wholesome radio right now, and that was beautiful. And Mike Ditka is like, he's like a gentle giant, really.
Well, Jason, we were kidding earlier about this team, and here in Chicago, this team is talked about on a weekly basis, and that's why I was really interested to see this, and I think you did a great job of finding different angles and finding different stories to almost freshen things up a bit. But
I learned a lot. Like, there was stuff in there that I didn't
and
know.
We thought we knew everything about the 85 Bears, but this team just continues to live on, and I really think it's the characters, as you mentioned them earlier, that made up this team. The Hamptons, the Bongos, they're hilarious. I was laughing during the entire film.
Yeah, I mean, you really, I said it at the reception, or at the round table we did afterwards, that we, to entertain ourselves, we were getting punch drunk and loopy in the edit room. We would just pick a spot in the Hampton interview or pick a spot in the Mongo interview or even a McMahon's interview. And no matter what, there was always a funny story being told. So they're just such entertaining guys. But, you know, you mentioned that Chicago especially, you guys tell the story on a weekly basis in one way or another. We definitely got a lot of eye rolls when we were first telling people that we were doing it. It was like, all right, what else are you going to say about this team? So I was pretty sensitive to that. And, you know, you're not going to please everybody. And I'm sure that there are people, we could have done 2 hours easily on Walter Payton and his meaning, why he meant so much to the city of Chicago. We basically had to boil that down into a minute and a half montage of some of his greatest plays, which you can only show like 9 or 10 because those plays last for so long. Right. I was really looking forward to editing that section and showing, like, you know, dozens of plays. They're so beautiful to watch. You don't want to edit. You just want to let him go. That run, for instance, against Detroit, which all of you guys have seen a million times, I could sit there and watch that on a loop all day. Uh-huh. So there are going to be points that I'm sure people thought, oh, why isn't the shuffle in there? Why isn't there more about Walter's early years? Why isn't it this or that? We couldn't please everybody, but I do hope that there's something that even fans who grew up with the Bears learned throughout these 2 hours.
You did a great job, man. Really well done.
Yeah, Jason, congrats. We appreciate you taking time, and if you ever get to find Chris Webber to add into the Fab Five 30 for 30.
That's the white whale.
That's just too bad on his part. Hey, thanks for joining us, Jason. Congrats on the project. It's a phenomenal job by you and everybody else.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Jason Hare, the Emmy Award-winning director of the 85 Bears 30 for 30.
And should mention, it was executive produced by Vince Vaughn, who also narrates the film. So he's in there. Peter Billingsley, as well as one of the executive producers. And it goes into the depth of the beginnings of Buddy Ryan's 46 defense, you know, the revenge victory over the 49ers, the loss to the Dolphins, of course, during that 1985 season. And as I mentioned earlier, the stuff you learn about what really went on Super Bowl week, too, in New Orleans. That's a lot of fun as well. So it comes out Thursday, February 4th, this coming Thursday. You can see it on ESPN.
And for those that are looking for me in the film, my part was edited out. I was a little bit disappointed, but I'm getting over it.
Don Pearson's in there.
Well, I really thought that I gave some great content, but it just didn't work out for me. We've got breaking news in the Adam Hoge family that we want to share next, and Adam Hoge was not a part of it. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Breaking news.
Quality bump selection, Mike.
Very well done by Mike Jacobson.
Hey, we got to get Jefferson Airplane worked into the show at some point today.
Rock stars are just dropping left and right.
It's like every day someone else is dying. Yeah.
Jefferson Airplane is dead?
That's the line of the show from home. Everyone, it's like every day someone is dying. It tends to happen.
I hate
on
the
a
world.
Daily
why,
basis.
Why do people die?
It just happens, Adam.
I plan on living forever. So, Adam, you were down in at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
And your son James was obviously not missing you and decided to have a milestone, huh?
Yeah, he started walking this week.
Yeah, James.
Which I knew was going to happen. It was I left Tuesday morning at like 5:30 a.m. and I was, you know, up half awake, and I'm just thinking, like, as I'm leaving, James is going to walk this week. I know it. He'd gotten so close where he was already taking like kind of one and two steps here, and then sure enough, Wednesday night, on the way to dinner with John Z and a couple of the other writers, and I get a text.
So you're halfway deep in your barbecue down in Alabama, pulled pork sandwich, extra sauce, a little coleslaw on top, and you get this text message coming through. Son takes his first step. Devastating.
Yeah, it was more like James decided he was going to just start walking. Because that's the thing with him. Like, we knew he could do it for a while. It was just sort of
he was waiting for you to leave.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, today we made up for it. Got plenty of videos. And by the way, I wasn't even mad that I missed it because the road he's been on, it's already he's a year and a half now. I was just happy that he's finally walking.
Well, of course. But did you feel that you were now out of the running for Father of the Year for this 2016 campaign?
Do you feel like
campaign?
A bad father because you weren't there and you were looking at football players in Alabama?
Do you think that you set him on the path and by you leaving released him to achieve heights?
See, if anything, I'm taking credit for it because I left, and that's all he needed.
Oh, like that
right?
was motivation, you're
yeah,
saying?
Yeah, exactly.
And when you
Because he's like, when my father comes home, I need to be able to show him that I can do this.
Well, so he was like practicing when you were gone.
Right, I left him. I said, hey, son.
To perfect it.
You better be walking when I come home.
312-981-7200. Who's living in the same regret that Adam Hogue is living in that he's not speaking on right now? 312-981-7200. I'd like to see some people co-voyage with you, Adam, on missing their son walking for the first time. I, of course, would never miss that. I don't have a son, and nor do I have a wife, nor do I... And my chances are
girlfriend or dating or anything?
I'm just living my own deal, KP. I'm just here with you guys.
Dates coming up?
I'm all about the moment. That's what
you
I
don't
do.
Have any dates coming up?
We're not talking about my personal life right now. It's just that's not a good idea.
You think though that he would be able you'd be able to get plenty because you've already copped to being arrested trying to get into Chicago Stadium to watch the Bulls during their first title run.
Great
you
date.
You have a bit of a bad boy thing going for
you. Regular badass car. I'm getting arrested in the United Center parking lot.
There's nothing better than taking someone to a game and not actually having tickets for the game and figuring, we're just going to figure out a way to sneak into the stadium. And if it goes awry, we're going to end up in jail.
Did she know that going into it, or did she think you had tickets?
Well, she knew we didn't have tickets, and we were trying to...
I thought you tried to sell them or something.
No. The tickets that we had were not for that game. That was my strategy.
Because I'm already envisioning, like, worst date scenarios ever. Like, here she is. She's like, oh, yeah, I'm going on a date. This guy wants to take me to a game. First of all, I don't want to go to a game.
No, she was a diehard.
Okay, we get to the game. He doesn't even have tickets. So then he tries to sneak us in, and we get arrested. This is like on the list of the worst date of all time.
By 93, we had been dating for well over a year. She knew my entire game, and this proposition was not surprising at all. All right, that tone means it's 4 o'clock, by the way.
My story's way better, though.
Yeah, your story is better. You
know. There's no competition here.
Congrats to baby Hogue.
It's all you. Why don't you get us into news, Adam? Father of the
We got a break here or no?
No, we're straight to news. 312-981-7200. Who can co-voyage with Adam?
You never know. You never know.
What now?
I don't know.
Jay Cutler. We love him. We miss him. Can't wait for 2016 to come rolling around. He'll be here sooner than you think. Mark Harmon, Adam Hogue, Kevin Powell.
That's because it is 2016 right now.
2016 doesn't start officially for you until September, whenever they open up. The rest of the year is generally irrelevant.
When's training camp?
It'll be last week.
I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Last week of July, always.
Mike Jacobson producing the program, Rob Harden News. So, Adam,
yeah,
what'd you think of what you're about to talk about, or what we're about to talk about?
Way to set it up.
Well, this is a strong setup, because because I don't really know how to talk about an obituary.
All right. So there's an obituary that was in the paper recently.
I get uncomfortable just saying the word obit because I'm fearful of my own life ending. Go ahead. Continue on.
You don't read the obits every day?
My dad does.
Here it is. I'll just read you the obit. How's that for a setup?
Please, read away.
Elizabeth Porter Bowman, 78, of Northbrook, Illinois, died peacefully January 9th, 2016, surrounded by her children. Betsy was an elementary school teacher and later a tutor, but her passion and focus was being a dedicated and involved mother and grandmother. She was a woman of loyalty, integrity, opinion, curiosity, and intelligence. A lifelong fan of the Cubs, Blackhawks, and Bears, except Jay Cutler.
I mean, that's just unbelievable.
That's how it ends?
That's a real obituary right there. That's how it ends.
I mean, how do you feel if you're, and I understand that she's not on her way out, she has left the building. You don't really need to worry about Cuddy's feelings at that point. But that's like, I mean, the guy's
getting... Well, so my question is, does she put, like, say, hey, that needs to be in there, or is this like...
This has got to be...
Someone who wrote it.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt in my mind that she didn't like Jay, but also whoever had to submit this to the paper...
That's pure hatred. I mean, to put that in your obituary and say, except Jay Cutler, I mean, that's the last thing you're putting out there for the public to see is your hatred for Jay Cutler.
I mean, God forbid any of us, you know, what was her name?
Her name was Elizabeth Porter Bowman. She was 78.
God forbid.
Northbrook, Illinois.
God forbid any of us join Elizabeth tomorrow, but.
I mean, that's kind of how I would like expect David Kaplan's obituary to read, right?
Hashtag Cap.
Hater. Hashtag
go
hater.
Out with a Jay Cutler shot. Well, doesn't that seem perfect?
He does hate Cuddy. Yeah. Well, I mean, what would be in your orbit? Adam Hogue,
Bear Senior Bowl reporter / Bears reporter,
Senior Bowl reporter,
the beat reporter.
I don't know. You're asking me. Wait, like, well, first of all, you were like,
if you want to take a shot,
a minute and a half ago, you couldn't even say the word obituary. Now you're asking me to write mine right here on the air.
Well, I don't want you to get into the real personal stuff. I just wanted to know, like, what part of your, like, if you're going to take a shot at a sports guy going out, who would it be? Like, if you're going
to, I'm not taking shots in my obituary.
But that's not the game. You have to take a shot.
Yeah,
okay.
Take a
okay.
Shot.
So 312-981-7200.
Give us some of the juicy stuff you know from your days.
If you want to
reporting.
Take one shot in your obituary, who would it be?
Who's
at?
Been a jerk to you?
I'll tell you what would be mine.
Who's an athlete that's been a jerk in the locker room? Come on.
Oh, Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just a straight jerk to you.
We had our moments. That's pretty much. Like, it. I get along with most people. I think. I mean, there's probably plenty of people don't like me. But
John Fox got on you a little bit this year.
Yeah, saw John the other day.
Yeah, hanging out with Johnny. Johnny Fox. Go to a Blackhawks game.
I mean, my sports obit would read something like Mark Carmen, diehard Bulls fan, will forever hold Jerry Krause responsible for the breakup of the '98 Bulls
instead of the six championships.
Later in life, he realized that Phil Jackson was to blame. And even Michael Jordan shouldn't have walked away on his own.
And now he's doing minor league baseball scouting.
But for whatever reason, he could never get past what Jerry Krause did to the team, causing the divide between the players and management.
So you dedicate your obituary to Jerry Krause.
I really want that to be your obituary.
Mark Harmon loved his Northwestern Wildcats.
Okay.
Never saw him make the NCAA tournament. Diehard Cub fan. His best moment ever.
Arrested in 1995.
Never saw them win a World Series.
93. He dreamt of one day seeing the Cubs in the World Series. Like every other Cub fan in the last 108 years, it didn't happen. Can you imagine that? Think about that. Think about how many people.
I know. A lot of people have come and gone without a World Series title.
Like everyone has come and gone and not seen it. Like for
Cubs, 2005, baby, 2005.
773 texted. Is it considered a mic drop moment if it's a shot in your obit?
That was kind of a mic drop.
That's definitely a mic drop on your way out. You permanently leave the stage, though.
Lifelong fan of the Cubs, Blackhawks, and Bears. Except Jay Cutler.
Except Jay Cutler. Just a subtle, the subtlety of that jab. Well done by her. Rest in peace.
If any members of the family would like to weigh in on how that decision went down, we'd love to hear from them. 312-981-7200. And we do give our sincere condolences.
Can I, speaking of Jay Cutler, give him some credit?
Please.
Why is he not in the Pro Bowl?
I can answer that.
He didn't deserve it when, you know, the original Pro Bowlers were announced. But basically every quarterback that made it backed out. So there's like five alternates. How is Teddy Bridgewater and Jameis Winston, how are they Pro Bowlers over Jay Cutler? That's ridiculous.
People like Elizabeth, they hate on Cutler.
Who are the
quarterbacks in the Pro Bowl this year? Eli.
Russell Wilson, Jameis, Teddy.
Speaking of haters, I got on Kyle Long quite a bit. And Adam, you and I talked about this season.
He sent it on Instagram. He's having a great time down there in Hawaii.
He should not be in the Pro Bowl. He did not have a good year at right tackle. I mean,
he didn't have as bad of a year as people think. He had some bad moments that got magnified, and people tend to forget that he also died.
Well, when you're a right tackle and you make a mistake, it's going to get magnified.
Well, and also, when Jay Cutler fumbles the ball at the end of the play and it gets returned for a touchdown, like, that kind of stuff makes it worse. People forget, though, that he dominated Justin Houston. He dominated Khalil Mack. He had some good games, and I think he's probably going to be.
So you have confidence in him moving forward. He will be the right tackle of the future.
Yeah. But
left tackle move?
That'll be interesting to watch. It's certainly one of the storylines we'll be watching over the offseason.
I mean, he's a freak athlete.
Yeah, I mean, he could do it, and maybe you want to solidify that. The problem is we already learned Charles Leno can't play right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells me they're not going
to
do that.
Just to confirm, by the way, Eli Manning, Derek Carr, Tyrod Taylor are your quarterbacks on Team Jerry Rice.
Yeah, Tyrod Taylor?
What?
And Team Michael Irvin is Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Teddy Bridgewater.
That is awful.
Well, and you know that.
And Jay Cutler's not in there. He had a great season.
Right, but
he had a really good year.
Right, but he doesn't have the resume that.
When you're resume?
Bad, well, it's been bad for so many years.
You're trying to tell me Tyrod Taylor has a better resume than Jay Cutler?
The Bills had a better season than the Chicago Bears. I mean, that plays into
Please.
It, right? Maybe it shouldn't, but it definitely does. Let me make this point about the Pro Bowl. By the way, it is not the Pro Bowl.
It doesn't 80, matter.
86, yeah, 86 guys originally invited, right? They had to go to 133 to fill out the rosters because everyone said no. It's not the – get rid of the Pro Bowl. Make it a Rising Stars game, whatever you want to make it. It's ridiculous.
They're guys, not going to get rid of it, Carm. It still gets big ratings.
Right, you know, but right. But and just, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, but my point is, okay, so 133 people. You're telling me Jay Cutler wasn't one of the best 133 players in the league this year?
I agree with you. But
so what's going on here? So forget the Pro Bowl part of it. What's going on in the league that this guy can't get respect? Because obviously he doesn't get respect in his town. And last year, he didn't deserve much respect. He had a terrible season. This year, he was much better, and he should have been awarded for that.
And
he wasn't. It's ridiculous.
I'm with you, man. I'm with Adam Hogue right now.
I couldn't agree more.
There we go.
I could see where early on in his career here, and David Hahn, the Trib, had a good interview with him. It was like about a month or so ago, and he pointed out when his first one-on-one interview with Cutler was sort of doing the Cutler thing and shrugging and throwing a water bottle up in the air, and now he's Mr. Mature. He's Mr. Professional. He can sit down and have a conversation with the media. So I think he obviously didn't get off to a great start here in town.
Speaking of David Haw, the Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com.
I texted with David Haw this week. He was on a radio show. I love David Haw. David Haw's a great man. He was on some show that was named, I got to find it. I'll have it coming back here and also coming back. You don't really need anything else.
Hey, here's our radio tease. Coming up, find out what David Haw's radio show's
title
was.
Great setup. Great setup to the segment.
I'm telling you.
And you're closing it off the same way.
The name of this show is worth sticking around for. I'm telling you.
It better be good, Carmen.
It absolutely is.
Because your radio tease right now is about to
be awful.
Well, let me give you the other tease. A Chicago Bear got out of line today talking about the best player, or this week rather, talking about the best player in the game. We'll discuss that next. How's that work for you?
Here's one more to your two teases. I will tell the listeners about a monumental historical day in WGN radio history.
But that's for another segment. You got to save that tease. I've already teased.
Oh, that's coming up, though, at some point.
Oh, well, okay. Then you got to be here until 7 o'clock, 720 WGN. So the name of the show that David Hall was on was the Zim Soup and Bone Show.
As producer Mike Jacobson pointed out, it sounds like something you would text to a chick, you know, late at night.
So... What kind of soup, Jacobson? Bring it over a matzo ball?
Some clam chowder?
Yeah. It's Zim.
It's Zim Soup and Bone.
You up for a... Oh, that's bad.
They're in Crown Point, Indiana, just killing it on the airwaves.
By the way, if you want to see the Zim
Soup... Why are you guys being mean to these guys?
I'm not being mean. I love them. I just tweeted them out.
I'm just laughing because of Mike's comment.
Hashtag Zim Soup, boom.
You can see that at the Carm on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. I mentioned you on the air at the Carm. I need followers. Hogue's got like three times as many followers as me, of course.
It's the Crown Point High School student-based broadcast production company.
Right. Well, they're youngsters, and they're on their way, and David Haw had a great time on their show, and he said they did a great job, and I'm sure they did. Moving along, I just thought the name of the show was one of the best names in radio history. Yeah. Without question.
Well, if that, you got to admit that would be a tremendous afternoon show.
Zim Soup and Bone?
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what I was thinking.
That's my new pickup line, though.
You've
just gonna.
I don't think people are gonna get it.
Zim Soup and Bone?
I think the people that KP rolls with, they might.
They'll get it.
So okay, let's pay off the other part of the tease, which is Brian Urlacher, who wants Cam Newton to celebrate like Peyton Manning, because when Brian played, he said, "I play defense, so I don't like when guys celebrate with dances and stuff. You know, I like the way you know." Who I like the way he celebrates is Peyton. He kind of gives the guy a handshake, goes back to the sidelines. I think that's a great celebration right there. You don't see him dancing. You see him doing all of that stuff. Even when he gets a first down, he doesn't do anything. So, I mean, my understanding of the world right now is people enjoy celebrations. People enjoy the fact that when an NFL player gets a first down, he points forward or spins the ball or shows his enthusiasm for the game. And what my understanding too is when a defensive player sacks the quarterback, a la Jared Allen, who also commented about Cam Newton, you know, and does whatever Jared Allen. What do you call the Jared Allen celebration? He's got like that rodeo or
stirs
whatever.
The pot.
I don't know. He doesn't do it.
Or Lamar
anymore.
Houston blowing ACLs. That's his dance move.
Good point. And once in the blue moon when he does get to do it. I mean, J.J. Watt, whatever. Willie Young's got his whole fish rod deal,
which I like.
I love it. But you know, Brian, he's weighing in that, you know, when Cam celebrates, it's too much. It's not a problem. 312-981-7200. I like celebration.
Let me first of all defend Brian Urlacher a little bit because I disagree completely with his premise. I also think that if you actually read the story, it's kind of a harmless quote and it certainly isn't anywhere near the other backlash. Mm-hmm. That has been directed towards Cam Newton at all. Like I think this is just like
he was having fun.
Brian said like I'm a defensive guy, so I hate seeing guys celebrate. That's perfectly okay. And then that got turned into like then it got grouped into all these people that hate Cam Newton and shouldn't.
And there's also look, Carm, you brought up the race earlier, and look, here's my thought on this: the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball. Is whether you want to admit it or not, it is show business now. That is what these leagues have turned into. They are money making business. It's as simple as that. People want to be entertained. They pay a lot of money to go to the games. They pay for the jerseys that are overpriced. It's all to be entertainment. This is entertainment. So if Cam Newton you're watching and you're entertained and people are buying and watching, that's all they want. That's all this is. It's show business. That's what it's turned into. And I'm fine with that. I sit down and I watch football and I'm entertained.
And I've been the guy at different times, like, get off my lawn, respect the game, put your head down after you hit a home
run.
That's
done with. This is 2016, not 1965.
Well, the part of this that I love is that we have so many – how many of these people that hate Cam Newton celebrations are also the ones complaining that the NFL doesn't let anyone have any fun anymore? because there's that crowd too. And actually, I'm probably part of that crowd because I hate when, you know, these guys are just doing harmless, fun celebrations and then they get fined the following week. And it's like, come on. Like, this stuff's good for your game. You want...
Yeah.
As long as it's not, like, harmful in any way. Like, even when, was it T.O. who pulled the Sharpie out and signed the football?
And that was awesome.
Like...
Or, you know, the popcorn. Like,
That's great.
Dancing with the cheerleaders. Gotta love it. Crying in press game conferences. Gotta love it.
Right. But people... They're on Cam, man. It's like it's too much the way Cam does it. The whole Superman deal and the gyration.
Okay, but he's connecting with younger kids. I see little kids now. They all have the Under Armour Cam Newton stuff on. They're wearing his jerseys. He's connecting with the younger audience. That's what the NFL definitely needs and wants.
They win the Super Bowl. Is he the most popular guy in the game?
Yeah.
I mean, is that what's going to happen? Because you know, the whole thing, listen, when he was in Auburn, he got there and his dad with the money and who's getting paid and who's not getting paid, he got crushed for that. And then, listen, when he got right into the league, it took him a little bit to figure things out. He was, you know, and he's never had a great completion percentage, but he's just a rare, I mean, when you're 6'6 and you're going downhill and you're 270 pounds or whatever he is running over people. I mean, he's an enormous. It's a threat that really doesn't exist anywhere else.
Well, and I think that he should be somebody that people are looking up to, because here he is. He had those issues. He got kicked out of Florida. Okay, he made mistakes when he was younger, and he's gotten in the league and gotten his act together, and now is doing a lot of stuff with kids off the field, and is a great role model. And if anything, should be used as an example for how to do things the right way. And, you know, if there are troubled kids out there, hey, look at this guy because he got it. He got himself down the right path and is now having a ton of success. And it should all be celebrated. And if he wants to have fun along the way, then more power to him. You know, the opposite of Cam Newton right now, in my opinion, is Johnny Manziel. Who's in the news again today because the cops got called to his house or whatever again because of some kind of domestic argument. And this guy just can't get a control of his life, and it's sad to see. And
bottom line is I like Cam. I think he's fun. I think he's good for the game. He's connecting with the audience. And, you know, I watched Tom Brady, and I don't think he was always like this, but the past couple of years, and I don't know if it's just a competitive drive, he's annoyed me a little bit more than he used to. I mean, he'll dive
always
for first downs, and he goes nuts. He's, like, pounding the ball. He's throwing his fist up. I don't know if it's just his competitive drive, and it's fine. It's whatever, but he doesn't get any crap the way Cam does. I mean, look, don't even search for Cam Newton's name in Twitter because there's so many idiots on Twitter right now with Cam Newton, and it's just kind of out of control.
Police in Texas, by the way, here's a story on Manziel in case you missed it. They are investigating allegations. Johnny Manziel is involved in an altercation with his ex-girlfriend. 2 a.m., Fort Worth police go to an apartment complex. They didn't find Manziel, but they did speak to a 23-year-old woman who said she was involved in a disturbance with her ex-boyfriend earlier that night in Dallas. They did not say if the woman was hurt. She was uncooperative with officers and raised concerns about her ex-boyfriend's well-being. Police then tried to call Johnny and later determined that he was safe. I mean, this guy, one-way ticket to I don't even know where. Reality show? Because, like, is he even good enough to play in the CFL? Would you even want him at that point, right?
And that's what I said originally before he even got drafted, was take all the nonsense out of here. He's not a good football player to begin with. Not at the NFL level. He was in college. Not at the NFL level. All right, well, coming up next as we talk about this Cam Newton stuff, Frank Schwab from Shutdown Corner wrote a piece on Yahoo about this. It's called Let It Go, Why Hating the Great Cam Newton is a Waste of Your Time.
I've come to this point in my life where I've been faced with so much from good, bad, or indifferent that I try to check myself if I'm trying to judge somebody. I felt a certain type of way then. I feel the same type of way now. Nothing's pretty much changed. They talk about maturity with me. They talk about skill set with this team. Nobody has changed. I've said it since day one. You know, I'm an African-American quarterback that may scare a lot of people because they haven't seen nothing that they can compare me to.
That's Cam Newton. Panthers quarterback, discussing some of the off the field stuff this week. And
definitely sounds like a guy with an out of control ego, huh?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Seriously. It's Adam Hoge, Mark Carman, Kevin Powell here on 720 WGN till 7 o'clock. Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports, he writes for Shutdown Corner. He wrote a piece on Thursday, the headline, "Let It Go, Why Hating the Great Cam Newton is a Waste of Your Time." Frank, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So give us the gist of this piece. Of course, I read it, and you had a column before that and got plenty of reaction. You mentioned the amount of comments you got, and this was more of the follow-up piece and kind of pointing out some of the absurdity of the hate you got back after the original column.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote, you know, he said, Cam said what he said, he played it at the top there, and I wrote about that, and I said, you know, he's probably right. Yeah, I mean, and that post, I mean, there was like, I think 5,600 comments last I looked, and my email box blew up immediately. I mean, it just went crazy, which, you know, it happened during Deflategate. It happened during when Richard Sherman did his thing. Like, I mean, there's certain hot-button topics that just people react to. And I was just, I mean, 70% of those emails were disliking Cam Newton, that's a guess. I think it's about 70%. And some of the reasons are so bad. They're just so dumb. They don't make any sense to me logically. So I wrote about it. I said, you know, if you have all these, you know, reasons for hating Cam Newton, at least make them be correct. You know, at least make them so they make some logical sense. And in many cases, they just didn't, or there's double standards. Or there's a lot of code words, unfortunately, that people use. And, you know, so I wrote about it, and that got a lot of reaction, too.
Frank, I love the piece. And there's a about midway through, you did a nice little thing here to make a point, and it's well done. You posted a quote from a reader. It says, quote, "The self-promotion or self-branding is a bit much. Too much time and energy focusing on himself. I believe the constant need for attention and face time is actually a sign of insecurity." And then you say, right, it's a terrible, terrible thing when a quarterback is into self-promotion and publicity. And the next five photos, the first photo is J.J. Watt, Peyton Manning, and Joe Montana selling pizzas with Papa John. There's Tom Brady right on SNL, Aaron Rodgers, and on and on and on and on and on. Look, I think your quarterback is going to have in anything, in any business, and your leader is going to have some sort of ego, whether it's your boss or a CEO or, in this case, a quarterback. I just don't get where the hatred is coming from. I mean, have you been able to make any sense of this at all, really? I mean, other than...
You know, it...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, other than the obvious thing most people don't want to talk about.
Right.
Let's going back, taking one step back real quick. If my quarterback didn't have an ego, I'd feel worried.
Right.
I would. Like, that's I don't know, like, how you get around that. Like, I don't want my quarterback to be a jerk. I don't want my quarterback to be, you know, a bad guy getting in trouble or anything. But every quarterback who's good, anyway, has an ego. Peyton Manning. Well, I really enjoy Peyton Manning. I live out here in Denver. I've enjoyed his career tremendously. He has an ego. There's no doubt about that, and that's okay. He's the five-time MVP. Like, he should have an ego. Cam Newton, he should have an ego. He's a Heisman Trophy winner, went number one in the draft, and now he's going to win the MVP. He should have an ego. Like, that's okay. I want my quarterback to be an alpha male. I want him to go into the huddle and take control. I want him to be the guy everybody follows, and that's totally fine with me. I have no problem with that. And, you know, obviously the second part of that, which, you know, I've been called for a few radio stations to talk about this, is the race issue. Like, I don't want to ignore it. I think that plays in. It's impossible to quantify how much. It really is. I couldn't tell you if this is a very vocal minority, if this is what a lot of people on their minds, if people just generally don't think about race, but yet it comes out. But I think it's impossible to ignore it completely and say it doesn't exist. I think it does. Like, you know, none of my emails said, hey, I dislike Cam Newton because he's black, because people don't talk that way. But, you know, when they're saying things like, well, this guy just needs to shut up and play. Well, you don't really tell guys like that. You just need to be seen and not heard. You know, I mean, it's just, or oh, how could this guy play the race card? That's terrible. What I mean, I think everybody can assume Cam Newton deals with some racism or has before. He deals with it every day, maybe. I'm not in a position to tell him to shut up and take it. You know, I'm not. Like, he chose to address this issue. I thought he did so in a very calm, very reflective, very intelligent way, and that's okay with me. I don't have a problem with him saying, hey, this is an issue, and I don't have a problem talking about it.
True story. We just had somebody walk by the showcase, Allstate Showcase Studio, and do the dab, so that was a beautiful moment in the show. Frank Schwab, Yahoo, shut down corner with us here on 720 WGN. What do you think about what's going on with the Chargers and you have the option now to move to Inglewood, maybe leaving San Diego, but Dean Spanos, their owner, saying that they really want to stay in San Diego. How do you think this plays out?
It's really interesting, and I think the Raiders are the most interesting part of that. And I'll get to them in a second, but I think somebody ends up in L.A. I have a tough time believing now that the seal is broken that it's just going to be one team there. But I think the Chargers legitimately want to stay in San Diego, and why not? You don't want to share a stadium if you don't have to. You don't want to move your operations after you've been there since, I believe, 1961. It makes sense for the Chargers to want to stay in San Diego, and I think that this was a goodwill sign on their part towards the city of San Diego to say, hey, we're still working with you. We still want to get this done here. Let's figure this out like grown men and, adults. And so I think that was an important step yesterday that they took. But now you wonder, okay, well, if San Diego stays in San Diego, if the Chargers stay in San Diego, I think it's obvious the Raiders will move to L.A. I really do. I think that they don't have a stadium to play in. I don't know if you guys have been to the Raiders stadium, but it's got a lot of history, but it's not an NFL stadium anymore.
It's awful.
It's not functional. It's terrible, right? It's the worst there is in the NFL by far. And it's just not functional anymore, and they need a place to play. Oakland hasn't done anything. I mean, they just haven't come to the plate, and that's fine. I'm not blaming them because I don't really agree that tax money should be used on stadiums for billionaires. But the facts are facts, and it doesn't look like they can stay in Oakland. I don't think they're going to move in with the 49ers. That doesn't make any sense for anybody. So if the Chargers move to L.A., well, that means San Diego wouldn't build a stadium for the Chargers, which means they wouldn't build one for the Raiders, I assume. Where do the Raiders play? Where? Like, there's no open markets at Vegas. Like, the NFL has treated Vegas like a disease for years. San Antonio, is that really where Raiders want to go? I think the Raiders are the fascinating piece of this because I can't tell you where they're going to be playing in 2019. I have zero idea. Chicago could use a second team. I really think that. Although I know it's a Bears town. I know it's a huge Bears town. There's so much football. You know, there's so many football fans there. They probably could support a second team, although it would always be the Clippers to the Bears Lakers. So I really truly don't know where the Raiders are going to play.
I don't know enough about the market, but to me it's weird that the 49ers moved all the way to Santa Clara. You know, where they built that stadium, and I've already seen a couple things this week with the Super Bowl being there that, you know, there's some angst with people in San Francisco about it being in Santa Clara. I don't really know a whole lot about that, but what if the Raiders has moved across the bay and it was more that's of a San Francisco team again?
Wow, that would be really interesting. It's possible. I mean, they would need a stadium still, and
right.
I don't know that necessarily that one's going to get built. And again, they want taxpayer money. I mean, they're not going to do like the San Francisco Giants did and basically build it themselves. That's interesting. That is an option I hadn't thought of, to be honest with you, because you're right. The first time I'm not very familiar with Northern California geography, so the first time I went to Santa Clara, we covered a preseason game, the first actually in Levi Stadium, because Yahoo's a big partner there, and we wanted to do a tour of the stadium, and I hung out with my friend, and we went to a Giants game in San Francisco, and as I was driving, I was thinking, this is nowhere near, why are they calling San Francisco 49ers anymore? It would be like if the Bears moved to Rockford, you know, like, okay, well, they're kind of Chicago, I guess. So you're right. They're not the San Francisco 49ers anymore. And, hey, maybe, you know, you build something in the spot where Candlestick used to be. I don't know, though, but the Raiders need a home at some point. The NFL's got to figure that out.
All right, Frank, before we let you go, I need your advice before I lay down some cash on the Super Bowl. Some crazy prop bets have been released. The odds the Gatorade bath will come up yellow is 2.5 to 1. Orange is 3 to 1, and clear or water is 4 to 1. What are you going with, Frank?
I kind of like the long shot there, the clear. Yeah.
Water?
Everybody's got water on the sideline. You know, you just got to take your chances with that.
I like it.
The one that the winning team grabs.
All right, Frank. We'll lay down some big cash, all right? We'll split it.
Yep. Put it all on it. Yeah.
All on water.
Send me my cut when you're done.
Thanks, Frank.
I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Frank, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Good stuff on Cam Newton this week.
Yep. Thank you.
Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports writes for Shutdown Corner. Last week we had Eric Edholm on.
Second football team in this city, Chicago Jaguars, Chicago Raiders, huh?
I think it would work.
Get a football dome so you can have a Super Bowl in the third largest city in the country.
Put it out around Hoffman Estates.
And it gets back to kind of the 85 Bears. Maybe we can talk about this next segment, not 312-981-7200. How many of you would support a second team and jump ship from the Bears? Because there's Bears fatigue a little bit in this town.
They haven't won
anything in 30 years. There's angst with the way things are run and some of the ridiculousness in the last few years with Phil Emery, Mark Trestman, and all that.
Third most expensive ticket in the NFL. You know, you put a little more of a affordable price tag on a seat, throw it out with a easier way to get to the stadium than going to Soldier Field. I wouldn't say that. I would think a lot of people could find that attractive.
Oh, I know a place where you could put the second football team, and this has to happen. You enclose the rest of U.S. Cellular Field and put them at 35th and Shields because the Cardinals used to play at Comiskey Park. Let's right a wrong from 1959 when George Halas pushed the Bidwill family out of town.
Yeah, but that would create indoor baseball.
Yeah, Rob, when we're in the summertime and we're having a cold beer and a pole of sausage at the Cell, you really want to be in a dome?
I think he's talking retractable, right?
No, yeah, but still it ruins it.
Enclose it as put a roof on it, but extend the grandstand out into the outfield.
I think if a football team is coming here, they are going to build a massive state-of-the-art enclosed stadium.
Which the city needs.
They do? Yeah, they do.
World-famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section on WGNradio.com. This year, Chicago is captured in black and white, presented in a special and one-of-a-kind way. In the 2016 2K's calendar, this is the eighth year for these highly sought-after calendars, and this is the first year it's all black and white. Not only does it feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lens of spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted with your name seamlessly blended in. You'll enjoy a view of Chicago that will change the way you look at the city forever. These black and white calendars add a whole new level of class and elegance. Give a gift that is completely 100% original. Go to WGNradio.com and scroll down to the feature section. Make a purchase of our calendar and a portion of the proceeds benefit JDRF. To make 2016 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar. The 2K's calendar, available in the feature section at WGNradio.com.
312-981-7200. We've got Wildcat Insider coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. Might talk with somebody out at Sox Fest in the 5 o'clock hour. But up next, a man had a goal on the show, and we're going to find out how he did. 720 WGN. I'm loving it. All right, I forced him into it. It was overnight.
I do have you to blame, actually.
720 WGN, this is The Beat. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Adam Hogue. He's Kevin Powell. Mike Jacobson producing the program. Rob Hart has your news.
I'm already hungry, and this segment's going to make me hungrier.
We were on, Kevin and I were doing overnights, Adam, and we were doing New Year's resolutions. And I said I was going to be the best at the Carm that I could be. And I said, what are you going to be, Kevin?
Worst New Year's resolution ever, by the way.
Wasn't. I left it kind of.
Yeah, you know, a little vague.
I went broad.
From breathing room, I understand.
And then I said,
how have you done so far?
I think pretty good. Okay. I think I'm off to a roaring start here.
We'll let the listeners decide that.
Be better, Carm.
I mean, I can only do what I can do, and I'm trying my best to do it. Thank you. Kevin stepped up and said he's not going to have fast food for the entire month of January. Mm-hmm. All the way to February the 4th, because he didn't want to start till like January the 4th for whatever reason he came up with.
Because it was the weekend and it was too hard to start the resolution on the weekend. So I had to wait till Monday, which was January 4th.
Well, today is January the 30th.
Yeah, so I...
How have you done, Kevin?
I've done very well. No fast food. No fast food, and the other day on the Steve Cochran Show, I made some breaking news announcing that I am extending the resolution through the month of February.
Wow.
Yeah.
It doesn't count. There's only 28 days.
It's 29.
Oh, no,
this
it's
year,
a
Adam.
Leap year.
It's 29. Not the best year to dedicate myself to no fast food in February.
What's the worst thing you've eaten in this last month that would constitute fast food that I could make an argument that you've eaten fast food?
Well, Subway's definitely not. Show. We got sushi from Walgreens. That's high quality sushi over there. You know what? I've been eating much better. I'm working out.
You look good.
I'm getting tight, Carm. I'm probably down, I'm not kidding, like 15 to 20 pounds already.
Are you down
in this month?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
He has a glow to him. Like, he walked in the office yesterday afternoon. I'm like, wow, KP. You look fantastic.
I was excited to be here, Carm, and it was a pleasant surprise to see you talking to Coach Manley. Interrupted your meeting. It was a great time. The no fast food is actually going better than expected.
I need more examples, though. What's the closest thing to fast food?
Subway, but Subway's definitely not fast food.
Whoa. Debatable.
No chance. But what I got...
What'd you get at Subway?
The chicken breast, no cheese. The chicken breast?
You have a weird definition. I agree that that's healthy, but that wasn't the point.
No, the point...
You said no fast food.
No, maybe it was the point. The point is your traditional fast food, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's.
Is Chipotle fast food?
No, but I wouldn't go there because I don't want E. coli. But
I'm so into the E. coli outbreak. Every time you go into Chipotle now, there's no line. It's incredible.
So you're a fan of the E. coli. You know, they're down. Like, sales are down a lot.
I mean, I walk right up and I make them very uncomfortable. Am I going to get E. coli with this chicken burrito bowl?
You say that?
Yes. And they look at me like, no.
You ask for extra E. coli?
Like, all right, I'm just going to trust you.
A few weeks ago, Sam Panayotovich and I were hosting this show.
Hashtag Sam Panny.
Sammy Panny. And we were debating on what is fast food, what isn't fast food, and this thing took off. I mean, we were getting texts and phone calls. The biggest debate was whether or not Portillo's is fast food.
Yes, because it's drive-thru.
Okay, so that's kind of what we settled on. I talked to Cochran about this, too. He says if there's a drive-up window, it's fast food. But I haven't gone to Portillo's yet, but I'm dying for an Italian beef, extra giardiniera, some cheese fries on the side. I'm dying for it.
That'll set you back a week.
But here's the thing. This is why this is why I extended through February, because Cochran and I and Andrea are heading to the Iowa caucuses tomorrow. So the way this was all going to work out was my fast food, New Year's resolution was going to end tomorrow, and Monday I could eat fast food because we're going to be traveling a lot. So I said to myself, you know what? We're going to be in the car. The last thing I need is, because I was going to go crazy. You know what I mean? I was just going to eat nothing but fast food.
It's really hard to go on the road and not eat fast food.
Right, exactly. Plus, a travel day is calories don't count. But I said, you know what? I've lost all this weight of working out. If I were to just splurge in the next couple days and just get a five-layer burrito from Taco Bell, maybe a couple cheese gordita crunches, maybe hit up Wendy's, get myself a double cheeseburger, half of that weight's, it's all wasted. So I said, I'm going to dedicate myself through the month of February, new year, new me.
Good job, Kevin. I'm very proud of you. By the way, what happened on your show yesterday? Why was Dave Ennett in?
Monumental WGN radio history moment.
When I saw Dave Ennett and Mary Vanderbilt sitting in the back seat of a car, I got nervous. That's all I'm saying.
Right. He posted that photo on Facebook.
Windows, I'm like, what in the world?
Windows got a bit steamy. So we were out at Egg Harbor Cafe for our Allstate Hometown Voices tour, doing the show from Egg Harbor in Naperville. And normally Adam Phillips, our fine engineer here, will get to because we go on the air at 5 o'clock. We start broadcasting.
He's a positive, uplifting guy.
Absolutely. Always sees the he's a glass half full kind of guy. Anyways, he's locked out. Can't get in. So it's 5 o'clock and we're just getting in. Adam normally gets in about 4 or 5 hours before a broadcast to start setting up. So Bill Murdoch is there and does some crazy karate voodoo stuff in his Chevy Equinox, sets up a makeshift studio, and Dave Ennett and Mary Vanderbilt are doing the reports through the 5 o'clock hour from the back of a Chevy Equinox.
That's incredible.
Yes.
Way to go, Bill Murdoch. What a stud.
So,
and Adam Phillips.
Two quick questions because we've got to take a break here. But so did someone wake Bill up in the middle of the night to get him there?
Bill, yeah, okay. Someone called Bill like at 1:30 and he showed up.
Okay.
And I got a very interesting text from Adam Phillips as I'm driving out to Naperville about 3:30 in the morning. And that was exciting. And I get there and they're just standing outside.
And did Adam get everything set up by 6?
Yes. So I should give them props. Adam and Bill.
These guys were heroes.
Adam and Bill did in an hour set up the entire broadcast. Technically, all good.
That's really hard to
Adam
do.
Adam and Bill. Yes. There's a lot of plugs and cables. I just stay far, far away from that stuff.
Did Phillips get fed appropriately?
Oh, yeah. Me and him got these
he
big
He better
skillets.
Have after all that.
I splurged yesterday. Some sausage and eggs and bacon.
Good job.
So that's all for me. New year, new me, Carmen.
I'm proud of you, Kevin. I'm very, very, very proud of you. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, we've got a new segment. We're calling it Hashtag Jackal Notes.
Is it better than the one we did last week?
Probably not. No, that was my segment, which was amazing. But, we're trying things out here on the show as we continue to make it a bigger and better show. Do we have a quick timeout here, Adam?
Yes,
is that
we
the
do.
Deal? All right, quick timeout. We'll get into news. Rob Hart has that for you straight ahead, 720 WGN.
It's a good way to celebrate the game. There's really not that much to be tired about when you're down there, I guess. It's really a fun weekend. So it's only a 20-minute game. It really won't be that bad, to be honest with you. So I'm just excited. I get to captain Taser for once in my life. So it'll be nice to boss him around a little bit.
Unfortunately, that's not going to quite work out. Jonathan Toews sick. Patrick Kane, though, still the captain for the Central Division team.
That's it. That's why Toews backed out.
Yeah, I didn't think Toews wanted to
he didn't want
allow this to happen.
Yeah. But, makes sense.
And by the way, that was Kaner on the Steve Cochran show earlier this week that Kevin Powell produces. Kevin Powell sitting in the studio, so is Adam Hoeks, so am I, Mark Harmon, 720 WGN. You guys going to watch tomorrow and listen? It's going to be you're going to hear be able to hear the game right here at 4 o'clock on 720 WGN, NHL All-Star Game. If people know the rules of the NHL All-Star Game, we will give you a Lou Malnati's gift card, 312-981-7200. Like, if you can name three things that are going to happen in tomorrow's game, it's the most confusing.
I can't.
Right?
I have no idea. I just know that there's like...
It's like a round robin.
How many teams are there?
Four teams.
I mean, that's correct. There's
four teams. There's four captains.
Wait.
There's
so
four
is he
divisions.
Wrong or is he right?
No,
right.
There's four teams. How many games are there?
Oh.
You're holding up three, so I'm guessing the answer's three.
Right. There's...
I want Mark Arvin asking questions and then holding up the answer with his fingers.
That I was trying to help you out.
Okay. Yeah, it worked, because otherwise I had no idea.
It's the most...
Winners get $1 million.
$1 million.
Yeah.
11 guys on a team. I did the math on that.
So is it like semifinals and then a final?
It's correct. Two semis and a final.
See that?
Is it?
Yep.
That's some logic right there by me. Also math, trying to figure out how there could be three games with four teams.
Last season's contest featured a record 29 goals in your traditional 5-on-5 play.
This is so...
It's so incredibly bizarre. Now, okay, hang on. 312-981-7200 as we try to give away things here. Kevin, what do you know about the All-Star game?
All right, well, it's going to be three 20-minute periods.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be two games of 3-on-3, and then the third period will be the winner of the first two periods, And whoever wins the game, the team wins the game gets $1 million.
Well, I don't think it's – each game's not three periods, though.
No. Each game is 20 minutes.
Right.
So the first game is 20 minutes. It's 3-on-3. The second game is 20 minutes, 3-on-3. And the winner of those two games between those four teams play in the final 20-minute period. And whoever wins that, and again, it's 3-on-3, wins $1 million for the team.
Well, hold on, Kevin. Let me ask you this. If the game is tied, what happens?
That I do not know.
Okay, you lose. That's
whoa. Come on, we're the three sports guys. Idiots sitting here don't even know the rules.
I didn't know any of that he just gave.
Kevin
us.
Gets
and he lives in Park Ridge, so he's my guy.
Yeah. There you go,
Jackal. I'm going to the Jackal. You want to? Yes.
Thumbs up.
All right, Kevin, you win. Congratulations.
Go with the Chicago Classic. It's the best thing on.
You guys are too nice. This is a high level contest.
All right, Kevin just called in and gave us the rules to the All-Star game.
Like, he literally explained the whole thing.
And we have three sports broadcasters here who don't even know the rules.
Don't know.
So
I know every rule.
And you know what? I also cover the NFL. I have no idea how they decide the Pro Bowl teams now.
I thought it's a draft.
Right there. Oh, well, I can tell you that. There's a draft, but how?
Yeah, I don't know. It's Jerry Rice and Michael Irvin, right? Aren't they the two head coaches of the Pro Bowl?
Team Rice, Team Irvin, yes.
Jesus. You're not going to the Pro Bowl to cover that, Hogue?
Oh, if they sent me, I would cover the hell out of it. I'd give you every little detail you need as I sat on the beach on Waikiki Beach pretending I cared about the game, which I don't at all. It's so ridiculous. Jay Cutler should be a Pro Bowler, by the way.
Just in case anybody didn't know, if the game is tied after 20 minutes... There will be a shootout. That's how
in the Pro Bowl?
No.
See, that's how I would watch the Pro Bowl if there was a shootout.
I like that.
Yeah, they're going full shootout after a 3-on-3 20-minute game.
Cool. I'll definitely listen because it's going to be carried here on 720 AM WGN.
Well, you're driving out to Iowa tomorrow.
Yeah, actually will probably listen to it.
Well, I would if I'm driving around, I'm more likely to turn it on here and listen to it. Yeah. And if I'm at home, there's a 0% chance I'm watching this.
Who's the biggest hockey fan on this show? Jackal, you do the podcast. Who knows the most about the NHL? Who wants to raise their hand?
I would
Adam?
Say, look at Hogue. All right.
Okay, I know it's not me.
Well, I used to cover the playoffs
okay.
for like 3 or 4 years.
How many guys can you name on the Central Division team?
Oh, man.
These are the NHL's best players. No pressure. We could do without.
You can go with Patrick Kane. Yeah.
That's correct, Patrick Kane.
But see, this is the thing. I don't, and I've said this on the air a million times. I can't get into hockey season until football's over.
Well, you kind of
like
really,
logistically,
you actually, like, really can't.
Like logistically, yeah. I really can't.
I hate to do this to you or okay. anybody on the show, but can you name one other All-Star in the entire league?
The entire league?
Yes.
Ovechkin?
Not playing in the game, hurt. But
Sidney
yes.
Crosby?
Okay. Do you know what division?
Dustin Byfuglien.
Pekarinen's in there, right?
Mm-hmm. We got to get Judd on the horn. He's got to explain all this to us.
Yeah, we should call Judd. His head's probably exploding right now.
Can you name anyone in the Central, KP?
Byfuglien.
Correct. Very good.
Tyler Seguin.
Are you reading it off your computer?
I was trying to play it off like I was thinking about it, but I just pulled up the rosters. Right.
Now the game's over.
Like Byfuglien, I could buy, okay, former Hawk, and then you go Tyler Seguin on us.
Yeah, no chance.
Yeah, you're cheating.
He wouldn't, and Byfuglien, there's no way he would have pulled that off either.
And Jamie Benn from the Dallas Stars, of course.
Yeah, no,
that.
Listen, I believe
that's
me.
That's a given.
773, the age of millennials has watered down all pro all-star games. In that case, let the guys go home and get rest for 4 days.
Well, they're doing that next year. They're having the five-day break in between January and February. Every team gets 5 days off, a pseudo-bye week in the NHL. Gary Bettman came up with that one.
John Scott's an all-star.
John Scott is an all-star. Good for him. Quick timeout? Is that what we're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Timeout. All right.
You calling a timeout or are we taking a break?
The one thing that I didn't mention that we should have mentioned, Jonathan Toews being suspended for the first game after the all-star game because he's sick. And has a fever and can't play and needs to get rest is one of the stupidest things of all time. Yeah. I'm sorry. Do it on a case-by-case basis. You can sniff these things out.
Between that and John Scott coming out and saying that the NHL part of them just trying to persuade him not to play in it.
And tried to
they brought up his kids.
It? Yeah.
Saying, would your kids really want you to do this? Between that and this nonsense. Well, that, by the way, that's way worse than what's happening in Jonathan Toews. But Jonathan Toews having to sit out a game because he's sick and can't play in the All-Star game. Ridiculous, too. Bad week for the NHL.
720 WGN.
Back here on the beat, Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen, Kevin Powell sitting in with us today. We're on until 7 o'clock and discussing some hockey in the last segment, some of the nonsense that went on in the league with, first of all, John Scott and all that with the All-Star game and the league trying to keep him out and okay, whatever. And then they didn't want John Scott to play in a meaningless hockey game, and then they're not gonna let Jonathan Toews play in a game that matters after the All-Star break because he's sick and can't play in the All-Star game.
Yeah,
it's just come on.
It's interesting that the Blackhawks, they obviously knew the rule, right? It's not like they were caught off guard, so there's no way that they would have held Toews out of the All-Star game unless he really was sick, right?
Yeah, this all stems from the NHL trying to make sure players aren't just bailing on it. They want all their stars in the game. But as you said, Carm, it's a case-by-case situation. You know what I mean? Toews has been sick for the past week. He didn't even play in the third period in the final game of the first half of the season.
Right, he's got the doctor's...
Yeah, what does he need, a doctor's note? He's got to bring Gary Bettman a doctor's note. Yes, Jonathan is sick.
And Gary Bettman is ruining the perfect record of Jonathan Toews. Because literally, does that guy, do you think he's
squeaky
ever...
squeaky clean.
Right? He's never been late for a class. He's never...
straight A's.
He's never colored outside the lines. Like, this guy's literally never done anything wrong in his entire life.
He's like
life.
A perfect human.
And he just got sick, and now he has a suspension on his record. Because Gary Bettman has created a rule that has no flexibility. I don't.
Yeah,
if I'm Toews, I'm suing the NHL. Let's go full on lawsuit. I don't. I want it expunged at the bare minimum.
Well, if he didn't get paid for that game, I would.
He probably won't. When they're suspended, they don't get paid.
He's not. So he's going to lose money for
now. What you think? I mean, that's normally how it works in other sports. Like in the NFL, it's how it works, right, Adam?
Well, it depends. I mean, yeah. I mean, if it's a if you get suspended, like, for violating the substance abuse policy, yeah. You're out four games. You don't get paid for those games. So, yeah. All right. So, speaking of the Hawks, though, Tracy Myers from CSNChicago.com had a fun piece the other day comparing where the Hawks are at through 53 games this season compared to last season. A lot of people think this team is already better than last year's team, which obviously went on to win the Stanley Cup. So here's some fun numbers. Again, the first 53 games this season compared to their first 53 games last season. The Blackhawks record at this point, 33-16-4. Mm-hmm. They were 33-18-2 last year, so very similar.
2 points better this year.
2 points better. They're 70 points now. They were at 68 last year. Their longest winning streak this year, obviously, is 12. They just got done with that. That was a franchise record. Last year, the most they won in a row was 8. Corey Crawford's record this season, 28-12-2. With 7 shutouts. That's a league best.
You expressed your outrage of Jay Cutler not being in the Pro Bowl. I'll now express my outrage of Corey Crawford not playing in the NHL All-Star game.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
312, by the way, texting in on Taves. It's a paid suspension. Thank you. And the 815 says, not buying Taves is sick. He's on a plane to Cabo. Sir, you don't know Jonathan Taves.
Hey, you know what?
He's right now doing push-ups and followed by a downward dog, and then he's going to do plank, and then he's going to work on something.
But you
something.
Know what? If he was on his way to Cabo, I'd have his back.
Oh, totally.
Because these players should be able to skip the All-Star game if they want to.
Yes and no. If they're going to have it.
You got to support the league, though, right?
I mean, how stressful is it to go to Nashville, hang out, listen to some music, and then go get on the ice for 20 minutes?
Play a game where there's no defense, and you're kind of just skating around with your buddies.
Yeah.
It's sort of the ambassador-type role, you know?
It is Nashville. You don't think any of these...
No, go ahead.
They're having fun down there.
Go have a good time. And that's. I mean, listen.
We should have done the show in Nashville this weekend.
We should have.
Where were we on that one?
I mean, these guys make a lot of dough.
Jacobson? It's
kind of part of the deal.
Where were we on that one? He's not even listening.
You know, Cochran and I went down to Nashville during the playoffs last season. Had a great time. Broadcast from the CMT studios. So we know we got a place to broadcast from if we need to.
Yes, you get Spike on.
We had Spike Odell on. It was a phenomenal show.
It was great
time
down
there.
You get some great perks, don't you, KP?
I do, yeah. And especially all the money they pay me. That's the biggest perk.
He has to go to Iowa.
It's not about the
Iowa caucuses, baby. Ugh. Going to Des Moines.
Are you
going
to stop in Iowa City and go to the Hamburg Inn? And have an omelet or something? Because you should.
I literally have gotten like 400 suggestions of where we should eat, where we should stop on the road trip.
Are you going to have Donald Trump on the show?
We're trying.
Gallup poll today, Donald Trump is the least popular candidate in either party. Makes me feel good. Thank you. Continue on about the Blackhawks, please.
All right, so Corey Crawford's record this year, 28-12-2 with 7 shutouts. This time last year through 53 games, he was 21-12-2.
The interesting stat there to me is that he's played 7 more games because Scott Darling has not been as good this year, right? Or
I think Crawford's also been playing Crawford's so well, it's hard to take him out of the net.
Yeah. The Blackhawks' longest road scoring drought this year was 179 minutes and 17 seconds. That they just went through that with their those games in Tampa, Florida, Carolina. And last year, the longest drought was 149.25. So
how did she find that?
That's a Tracy Myers has really got a lot of time on her hands.
Yeah, that is digging.
I mean, that's
statistics.
Great research right there. I probably could have skipped that one as I was reading through it.
That was a lot.
Sorry about that. And points that Patrick Kane has through the season's first 53 games, 73 points. Through 53 games last year, he had 59. That's a big difference. 73, 59. He has 30 goals right now compared to 26 at this time last year.
312-981-7200. Is this team better than last year? Are they going back to back? The last team in the NHL to go back to back was
Detroit Red Wings.
Yep. Can the Hockeys do it? And will I be fired for calling them the Hockeys?
Close. These numbers though interest me too though. Blackhawks who made their NHL debut this season, because there's been a lot of turnover. 7 Blackhawks made their NHL debut so far this season.
And the biggest concern with this team going into the year was what? You lose Patrick Sharp, Brandon Saad.
This year was almost looked like a throwaway year.
Right. It was almost like, okay, you know what? They'll be competitive because they do have a lot of talent, but maybe I think at this point now it's going to be like the last time they won it. Can they continue to stay fresh deep through the playoffs? I mean, the playoffs are long.
But listen to this. Guess what that number was last year at this time.
Which number?
How many Blackhawks made their debut, NHL debut? It was also 7.
Synergy.
So, well, no, it's just that they went through it last year too. Okay, now here's the another one, though. Players who were on the Blackhawks lineup, in the Blackhawks lineup, in game number 20, game number 53 last year,
mm-hmm.
who aren't on the playing roster now due to trade, reassignment, or injury. So basically the turnover from this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
10 players.
Yeah, and a lot of good ones, even though Brandon Saad's having a generally awful season for Columbus and can't seem to figure it out with when Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and whoever else you want to throw in there is not around. Marian Hossa.
David Runblad, Patrick Sharp.
David Runblad.
Marcus Kruger, who's coming back. Brandon Saad, Johnny Oduya, Ben Smith, Brian Bickle, Joakim Nordstrom, Brad Richards, Antti Raanta.
The addition of Panarin on this team and watching the second line this season, which has been absolutely dominant, not obviously the best on the Hawks team, but not in the entire league, really. The second line of Anisimov at center and then Panarin and Kane on the wings has just been fun to watch. I mean, Panarin and Kane are perfect together.
They really should build a statue for Stan Bowman outside of giving him a 3-year contract extension that they did. Make one for Q.
You've been really into statues lately.
I like statues.
You already want Theo to have one.
Theo deserves one. Doesn't he?
Juan Uribe deserves one. I've been advocating for that for a while outside the cell.
Does Jim Hendry deserve one?
No.
He went to the NLCS too.
Kenny Williams? Kenny Williams?
Dusty Baker?
Kenny Williams
Does Dusty
deserves
Baker
one?
Get one?
No. Please.
You think Kenny Williams deserves a statue?
I'm seeing the future with Theo.
Does Joe Maddon need one? Get one?
Yes, absolutely.
After one season.
Well, no. Listen, all I'm saying is just work on the renderings because they're going to have to go up at some point here.
What about a Dickus? How is there not a Dickus statue?
Because that team...
Probably because
they
don't
own the stadium. Here we go. Carmen, the 85 Bears.
Well, Dickus doesn't deserve a statue just because that team should have won at least 2 Super Bowls, bare minimum.
Barbara Absolutely. Wants Kevin Butler statue outside Soldier Field.
I love
Field
Barbara.
ASAP.
Hashtag Barbara. 312.
773. Sammy Sosa needs a statue.
I think Sammy does need a statue.
Oh, here's a text. Who deserves a statue at Chicago?
Well, how do you want the Theo statue? Like, what's his pose?
Yeah,
what's
because
he doing?
He's not like swinging a bat or throwing the ball. He has like a clipboard in his hand or something?
No, he's sitting down. He's staring straight ahead at a computer.
He's talking to the cat man.
And he's got.
He's having a discussion with David Kaplan.
Yeah, the statue is a one-on-one interview with the cat man and Theo.
He's got 5 cell phones in front of him, and he's got a very serious look. What do you think that Theo talks about with his wife, for real? Like, what's that conversation like? What do you think they talk about? Do you think they have a nice Cabernet?
And Kyle Schwarber being a DH.
Theo's got his...
Yeah, he plays
his
music.
He's got his music playing side.
Goes to Starbucks, gets a banana.
This is my own...
Very unique, going to Starbucks.
This is my own inability to connect with Theo coming out. I want to be on the level with Theo. And part of that is clearly my fault. I think Theo's reached out a couple times to me, and I just
Theo's reached out to you?
No, I'm making that up.
I know. Thanks, Carm.
I want to be tight with Theo. How do you get to know Theo?
You don't ask on the radio what he talks about with his wife.
Phil Jackson deserves a statue too from the text line. A lot of people in this city deserve a statue. Mike Jacobson deserves a statue.
Jacobson, no question. Jordan deserves at least 5 more statues from 630.
Agree. There should be statues lining the United Center. Just a circle of Jordan statues, different poses.
Hey, Scottie Pippen got a bust.
Yeah, he
remember
does.
That thing?
Right when you walk into the UC.
Red Kerr. Mm-hmm. Red Kerr's got a statue. See, I'm throwing out guys that deserve statues. I mean, the statue bar is not exactly super high.
You love your statues, Carm.
Scottie's got a statue, little Pip. Little half bust of Pip out there.
That thing looks weird.
It's not a great looking statue, I agree. It's an odd statue.
It's very weird.
Mark Burley, does he deserve one?
Sure.
I've heard rumors that may actually happen.
Mark Panarko got one right away.
See?
14, hashtag 14.
You don't have to retire a number. And the thing about the statue is they get moved around. Like Ron Santo, one day he's there, and the next day they're moving him over.
The Jordan one's been moved.
Right. This is not something.
I would have loved to see Burley come back for one more year.
Absolutely.
Go out a White Sox, get his number retired, get the statue up.
56 will be retired.
Win a World Series.
You know what also deserves a statue is Hawk Harrelson, now only doing road games. Adam Hogue looks like he's constipated thinking about that concept.
Hogue is cringing at the thought of a Hawk statue.
I mean, he deserves to have the TV booth named. Isn't that whole floor already named?
Dave Ennett has his own broadcast booth. The whole floor is Hawk Harrelson floor.
It's something like, or maybe it's just the TV booth. There's something up there named after Hawk already.
Dave Ennett deserves a statue out of Ryan Field Welsh Ryan.
I mean, it should be
a statue. Like, this is like, do you really give broadcasters statues?
Well, Dave.
Well, Jack Brickhouse has one right outside.
Yeah, we're looking.
Okay, that was a bad question.
Turned 100 this week, Brick.
To me, it's like, okay, you name the broadcast booth after him, you induct him into the Hall of Fame, the team Hall of Fame. Do the White Sox have a team Hall of Fame?
That's a good question.
I should be in that Hall of Fame for watching the team right now.
You did give a lot. All right, 312-981-7200. It is Sox Fest this weekend. They are still looking for an outfielder. Dexter Fowler's out there and could perhaps fit on both sides of town.
It's a good depth move.
Well, depth at the top of the lineup. We'll do a little bit of the winter meetings / Sox Fest coming back here. 720 WGN.
Breaking ball hit deep to left field. This might go. Swisher to the track. Jumps. And it is gone. A home run. Yoenis Cespedes does it again. What an effort by Nick Swisher. But the ball landed just beyond his reach into the first row or two in left field. And Yoenis Cespedes continues to write one of the most incredible stories that a Mets hitter has ever written.
Death coming.
Baseball is coming.
He would have hit 35, 40 home runs with the White Sox this year. Playing at the Cell. That's exactly what they needed was him. Otherwise, this just becomes another really good offseason instead of excellent, whatever.
I don't know why. I just got this feeling, though, that he is going to get his money and not be good. But didn't he end up signing? What did he sign with?
He signed with the Mets.
It's a
three-year deal with a one-year out.
Yeah.
See, now that, he's going to be good. He's going to be good. Because he has a chance to make even more money next year because the free agents next year are not as loaded as they were this year. I wasn't in love with Cespedes. I didn't think that was for sure the answer.
Well, but what was on the market, though, he absolutely was the right decision.
I wanted Alex Gordon number one because I thought, most importantly, he helps your defense in the outfield, which has been a huge problem. And you also weaken the defending division champs, the defending World Series champs. So that's why I had him number one, and then I probably had Cespedes number two and Upton number three.
Well, if you had either one of those guys, any of them really, on paper, the White Sox lineup looks like one of the better ones in the entire league.
I think when you go out and you get Brett Lowry and you go out and you get
Todd Frazier, a great pickup, but you're looking at a potential, if you get one of those three guys, a potential middle of your lineup of Jose Abreu, Todd Frazier, and then insert one of those guys. That's my heart of your lineup.
Let me give you this story from Dan Hayes, White Sox insider for CSN Chicago, because he actually wrote something that did has me a little optimistic.
What did Downtown Danny Hayes say?
Downtown Danny? Did you just make that up, or is that like
is that
really
what
his nickname?
I did just make that up. Yes, D squared. I think he should go with that, and Dan Hayes, next thing you know, will be on a whole nother level. I love Dan Hayes. He's a very good guest, by the way. Go ahead.
All right, so he cites ESPN analyst Dan Zimborski. Is that how you say it? Zimborski?
We'll roll with that.
Z-Dog.
It's the Zimborski projection system. White Sox projections. Club is already at or near the top of the American League Central. Zips, this is Fangraphs, projects the White Sox to win 84 to 85 games this season, the club's highest projection since 2011. Szymborski says they have reason to be happy. Not overjoyed, but happy. They've had a good offseason. I would still like to see them go after Ian Desmond, Dexton Fowler, at least one of them. It's a franchise that still has some holes, and it's a division that's ripe for the taking. Szymborski has run projections with his system since 2004. He projected 78 White Sox victories in 2015. How many did they win?
He predicted, what did he predict?
He predicted 78.
Last year they won 74.
76.
76, my bad.
So two off. In 2014, he projected 70. They won 73.
73.
So he's been pretty close on this.
Well, listen, when Szymborski weighs in, there's no part of me that wants to go anywhere close to Szymborski and challenge him. I'm already intimidated by Szymborski.
The Z-Dog?
Z-Dog is coming with it. Z-Dog, by the way, is not Zim from Zim Bone in the show that we talked about earlier today. Listen, my point with the White Sox is, if you're going to go out and add to your middle infield like they have and be aggressive and trade prospects, then at that point you're all in. So why not just, hey.
But at this point they haven't shown that they're all in, though.
Well, right, they...
There's no in between, and right now
no, there is for them. But they've been that way since.
But they need to stop doing that.
No, I'm with you. I'm totally. Yeah. But this is like when we were at the All-Star break, All-Star break to the trading deadline.
I mean, we don't
hey, what are you doing?
Right,
like just come up with a direction.
Direction, exactly. And they've been stuck in the middle for the past five, six, whatever it's been, for a while.
And they ended up doing nothing.
And
they're just like, we're just going to try to go for it with our bad team underperforming.
We like the pickups they made this offseason. Yes, they've had a good offseason. But it's still in that middle ground. It still doesn't put them over the top. It doesn't make them an obvious contender. It's sort of, we'll see what the Sox, maybe around 500, give or take.
Dexter Fowler is sitting right there for him. He was a big part of the reason the Cubs went to the playoffs last year. He set the table. I don't love the guy because sometimes I look at him and think, are you playing hard? And the answer to that to me, when I'm looking at him, is no. I mean, ball to the gap. Dexter's running 60% after it. Just going to, I'll pick it up off the wall, throw it in. It's going to be a double anyway. Well, sometimes that turns into a triple. And it just, that bothers me. But he's a leadoff guy, and he can play anywhere in the outfield. He allows you to move.
He's a leadoff guy.
They do, but you can add another person at the top, and maybe he bats second for you. It gives you a lot of flexibility. Switch hitter, too.
I like Fowler, too. I wouldn't want to start him to start the year. I'd have him come off the bench.
Why wouldn't you just... Okay, well then...
Because who are you going to take out?
I mean, Avi.
Avi.
You can't... I agree that you need to have depth in case Avi's bad again, which probably will be. But you can't bail on him. You got to let Avi Garcia start the year.
Okay, fine. Let him start. Then you put Eaton or Avi in left. You put Fowler in center and you DH Melky.
Just say Fowler runs 60% after the balls, though? I mean, Adam Eaton, at least he's going to go hard after every single ball hit out there.
Right, but he gets hurt all the time. Just you take a little, lighten his load a little bit.
He also makes mistakes.
Right. It's also hard to get really excited about a lineup that features Tyler Saladino as your starting shortstop.
I like Saladino.
That's a problem.
The salad bar.
Holy touchdown, baby!
Chicago Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hogue, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen, Kevin Powell is in for JP. Got another hour left here on the program. We'll hit up some Northwestern college football and basketball talk. Dr. Jim Phillips joins us in about 10-12 minutes, and Pat Fitzgerald right after that, the head coach of the Northwestern Wildcats football team. Signing days on Tuesday, so college football returns to the news.
I'm very excited to see how the Cats build on this year's trip to Tampa, playing on New Year's Day. It was a phenomenal season, and last time they did that, a lot of stuff off the field kind of, I think, impacted the program, and you would think that was a huge fluke, and hopefully Fitz and company will keep a rolling here pretty solid. He's certainly more... I would think that hopefully they'll be getting maybe the best class that they've ever had. We'll hear what he has to say, although every coach loves their class this time of year, right?
Before we get into all that...
Oh, here we go.
We got to get you... Our producer, Mike Jacobson, found this glorious piece of audio from the radio this week. If you know who Mad Dog Russo is... Mad Dog Radio. Mm-hmm. Used to be
him and Francesca in New York for years. Longtime sports talk show host.
He's on MLB Network a lot now. He's a baseball guy, and anyway, he lost his mind this week over a stupid trivia question. Should I mention what the trivia question is before we get into this? Does that make sense or no? Okay, so anyway, it has to do with Super Bowl I, and the trivia question is amazingly dumb to the point that none of the listeners could get the answer. And it was driving Russo insane. Just wait till you hear it. This was Russo this week on his radio show.
Rick in Tucson. Rick, good afternoon.
How's it going?
All right, Rick, I'm doing well. The final Packer offensive lineman announced during pregame introductions in Super Bowl I.
Greg Dillingham.
No, it's not him. Now, there's only one more. There is only one more. There is, that's it. One more. It's not Gail Gillingham. It's not Jerry Kramer. It is not Jim Ringo. It is not Bill Curry. It is not Fuzzy Zeller. It's one more. That's
Fuzzy
it.
Fuzzy Zeller?
Manny in Jacksonville. Super Bowl I. Manny, final pack of offensive linemen announced during pregame introductions.
Who cares?
I don't know.
Take a guess.
I don't know.
That one, I don't know.
Jack Lord. No, that's not the answer. From Hawaii 5-0, Ryan in Atlanta. Super Bowl I, final Packer offensive lineman announced during pregame introductions was who?
Oh, Chris, you always put me in a hole, buddy. You always put me on a hole.
Who is it?
Who the hell would know that?
Give me the ones that already mentioned.
No! Listen, Larry, listen! Who? What was it?
Forrest Gregg.
No, I said it's not Forrest Gregg, damn it! It's not Forrest Gregg! It is not Jerry Kramer! It is not Fuzzy Thurston! It's not Mel Hine! It's not Vince Lombardi! It's not Ray Nitschke! It's not Mike Webster! It is not Anthony Munoz!
Mike Webster!
Jeff in Florida, who's the lineman? Jeff! Wake up! Who's the lineman? This is the garbage you give me! Zach in Philly! Zach, who's the lineman?
Well, it's Seth. And I'm going to say Bill Curry?
No, I just said it was a Bill Curry! Damn it!
Oh, man.
Oh.
See, now, that it makes me reevaluate my whole radio game. Like, maybe I just need to be screaming the whole time.
Yeah, you just need to start yelling at people?
So, since you already played it...
What? What was the answer?
I have no idea.
I have no idea, and I don't care.
I don't know.
I really don't care.
I don't know who would possibly know the answer to that trivia question.
I don't even know the question. What was the question?
I don't know who the first
lineman announced on the field in the beginning of the Super Bowl. Super Bowl I.
Who was the first Bears player announced in Super Bowl 20?
No idea.
Like the first one. Who's the fifth offensive lineman?
No, I just said it was a Bill Curry. Damn it!
I would have went with Bill Curry, and I would have been yelled at by Mad Dog Russo.
I mean, how would you even find that out?
I don't know. Of all the crazy statistics and weird things you can find on the internet, I don't know if you could actually look that one up.
There is only one more!
Do we have anything else to give away? Because we should give away some, if someone can come up with the answer to that ridiculous question.
312-981-7200 if you have the answer.
I mean, I know the answer.
Did you look it up?
How do you know the answer?
Well, don't give it...
Don't give it away?
No, don't give it away. We're going to do a trivia question.
I'm an expert on Packers.
And when people call in and don't get it, Carm, that's when you can try out the screaming bit. Yeah.
Okay, great. 312-981-7200. Who was the...
It's not Fuzzy Thurston!
It was not Kyle Long. I can't do... That was a good invitation
there. Yeah, that was pretty good.
One more time.
It wasn't Fuzzy Thurston!
I mean, that's right there. That's you could be the next Mad Dog Russo. Hogue.
Does he yell like right into the mic, or does he have to like...
He's been notorious for things. You ever heard him completely trash his entire staff? I mean, the guy goes off all the time.
No, I just said it was about Curry, damn it!
312-981-7200, 720 WGN.
It's not Mike Webster!
What
That's good.
Are we doing his question?
Carm, Hogue's stealing your thunder here. I think he's got the streaming bit
not,
down.
I am not in this competition anymore. Hogue just like trumped me to the moon.
Yeah.
All right, I'll get involved!
That's the loudest I've ever heard you yell.
I didn't even know you could raise your voice.
Have you
Jared Cutler should have gone to the Pro Bowl! That's terrible.
Jesus.
I mean, I really am embarrassed for myself.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
Jennings, can you yell?
He did it pretty well.
Jennings got it.
Yes!
Don't, we can't ruin David Jennings' voice, though.
That's true.
I mean, that would be...
What's his name?
You wouldn't...
Jesus. Chris Mad Dog Russo's my hero. You saying Al's got it there, Jacob? All right. All right, Al. Who was the offensive lineman in Super Bowl I?
The fifth one announced.
Bob Skoronski.
Who?
Bob Skoronski.
Yeah, you're correct.
Oh, we can't yell at him?
Good job, Bob.
Good job, Al.
Al.
What are we giving
just
him?
Just call me Packer Al.
Packer Al.
Packer Al.
Packer Al.
What happened to your Packers?
They're better than 5-11.
All right. Well, good luck. We're going to Luminati's gift card.
No, he's going pair of tickets to the auto show.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
congratulations, Al. You the man.
Zach and Philly. Zach, who's the lineman?
I'm going to guess Zach and Philly did not get the correct answer.
I love the guy who was like, I don't know.
Well, it's official. Our listeners are smarter than Chris Mad Dog Russo's listeners.
Man, just like that. Bam. Hogue, one more imitation, please.
It wasn't Mike Webster!
When we come back, Dr. Jim Phillips will be with us.
I just yanked my headphones right out of the thing.
You look good, though. 720 WGN.
No, I just said it was about Curry, damn it!
The Wildcats of Northwestern, Evanston, Illinois.
It's time for Wildcat Insider. On the home of Chicago's Big Ten team, 720 WGN.
See if I still have a voice after the last segment.
You sound good, baby.
Oh, to get it back there. Dr. Jim Phillips on the phone joining us now here on 720 WGN. Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen, Kevin Powell here. Till 7 o'clock, Jim. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing awesome. I'm in beautiful Marco Island, Florida, of all places today. So
me.
I'm sorry to report that to my three friends back in Chicago, but that is the truth.
Speedo?
Not a chance, buddy.
Purple Northwestern Speedo, love it.
You know, Jim, they really put these meetings in difficult places for you, don't they?
I know they do. They do, but I 3:30 wake up call tomorrow, guys, to drive an hour and then take a flight back. It won't sound nearly as good as the first part of it, and letting you know that Marco Island is beautiful, but all good things must come to an end. So back home tomorrow morning.
And we'll get on the cats in a second, but I just want to know one more thing about your life. What time do you normally wake up? Because 3:30 for everybody else would be death, but for you, I feel like that's like a half hour early.
Yeah, that's about natural time. There's lots of things that you can do when everyone else is sleeping. I think sometimes sleep is overrated, but that's just the way it goes.
It's on the Dave Ennett level of waking
right.
up bright and early.
Dr. Jim is my inspiration in life. You should know that. And he also makes me feel just like a half a human, too, because what you do in a normal day is about 7 times what the average person does. So it's just impressive. By the way, what happened to the Cats on, Thursday night with Sparty? I know that Michigan State's a great team, but you're hoping to be a little tighter.
Yeah, it's, I think a few things have happened over the course of the last couple weeks. First of all, we have not shot the basketball very well. And when you shoot 20% against Michigan State, you're not going to win. You just aren't. Secondly, the schedule, we've gone through a gauntlet. When you play Maryland at Maryland, Indiana at Indiana, Michigan State at home, and now tomorrow, Iowa at Iowa. That's as rough of a stretch as anybody's had in the Big Ten. So you got to get through that, and then you kind of take a deep breath, and then the schedule, though not easy, comes back to you a little bit, and maybe you can get on a streak just like you've gone on a streak in the other direction. The third thing is it's still a young group. It just is. I know we have Alex and Trey, two seniors. But when you look at Derek Pardon, true freshman, Aaron Falzone, true freshman, Brian McIntosh, sophomore, it's a young nucleus, and you're just going to have those kinds of spells. So 15-7 overall, with a chance to have a really good run here in February is what I think we're all pointing to.
Now, the reason why you're in Florida is because of the National Association of College Directors of Athletic Meetings, correct?
Correct.
What was on what was on the docket this week? What got accomplished?
Yeah, so it's only been for a few days. I came in yesterday, had some fundraising to do in the area, and then I came over last night to Marco. We've had meetings all day today. A few things, we've talked about some of the council work with time demands, which we have to continue to try to figure out. We talked about issues of things like the NBA draft and college baseball, and so all of those things are working. But there's other areas that we have to look at, so we have a chance to visit about that. One of the areas is early signing period in football and some of the things we're doing in football. And I think when you look at it, it's just not healthy right now with some of the things that you see coming down the stretch on signing day. All of our other sports, for the most part, have an early signing period, and we don't in football. There's one date. It's the first Wednesday of February. But I think the low number is probably 80%. The high number would probably be 90%. Kids know where they want to go in their high school senior season. The recruiting process just is sped up. And I think what occurs are two things. One is there's this ability for kids to make a decision and move forward and want to make a decision. And until you're signed on the dotted line, there's always some jockeying for position that happens. And that's, I think, unfortunate because it doesn't happen in a sport like basketball. And I've studied it quite well and talked to a lot of coaches. There's an unwritten rule. When you are committed to a particular school, you're not going to call that kid, and you're going to honor that. It's kind of a gentleman's sportsman kind of agreement. In the sport of football, it's just not like that right now, and that's not healthy in football. So we have to do some things. I think an early signing period is part of it, and I'm hopeful that over a period of time we can move towards that. It doesn't mean that you won't have some kids flip-flop at the end, but let them do that. But let's get 80 or 90% of those kids to the school that they want. Now, if there's a coaching change that occurs a lot after the season, so maybe you have an early signing period in the fall, then I think you allow those kids to open their recruitment again because there has been a coaching change in their particular situation. So it can be flexible, and it can really be advantageous for the young men that you're recruiting. But let's put a stop to some of this nonsense that's occurring all the way up to signing period that we just don't have in our other sports.
Dr. Jim Phillips, Northwestern Athletic Director, with us here on Wildcat Insider 720 WGN.
Jim, I agree that an early signing period really helps some of these issues. What are some of the obstacles, though? I mean, some of the pushback to that idea and getting that done. And does the kind of the hoopla and as big of an event as signing day has become, is that part of the conversation?
Well, you can still have, hey, I'm going to have three hats on the table, and I'm going to select the hat that I want on signing day. You can still have that with some of the elite young men that are being recruited nationally. But let's do it for what works for the majority of the country. And what works for the majority of the country is this opportunity to have those kids sign, to be done with it, so they don't have to field any more calls from coaches that they really don't want to talk to, so that you don't have college coaches working the high school coaches about kid X at kids, at school Y and state, are you sure they wouldn't want to come to our school and the rest of that. So it's similar to some of the other issues we've talked about. We have to act like grownups, those that are caretakers of college athletics, and it's just not in a good place. I will tell you, there are some conferences that don't want to change that because, part of visiting campuses happens at different times of the year. I think some conferences think that the northern schools, it hurts the northern schools for a kid to have to come on an official visit in November, January, December, the winter months. I think kids are smart enough to look through some of those types of things, and I don't think it affects a majority of them. It may affect a few. So sometimes it's competitive advantage or disadvantage depending on what conference you're in, and you think it's more of an advantage for you to have that signing day later on. So those are some of the obstacles you have to get through, and it's got to be a consensus, and you got to, you know, have enough folks that would be supportive of it. But I think you're going to see that hopefully in the course of the next year, some movement on that. Guys, we do it in all of our other sports. We do it in basketball, and we do it in baseball, and we do it in field hockey, and we do it in volleyball, and it works well. Yeah. It works well. And football is such a visible sport, and you see all the stuff that's going on all the way down to the last minute. It's just not healthy.
And by the way, if a kid can't figure out that it's cold in Chicago in December, I don't think I want him on my campus anyway. I mean let's be real here. But what you're saying is that it's incredibly prevalent, the over-recruiting.
Oh, no question. No question. And I think that's where you're doing kids a disservice.
Yeah,
I agree. You're going to accept a verbal commitment, and then all of a sudden you can get a better kid, and this kid's been off the market for a year and has made his verbal commitment as a family, and then all of a sudden you tell him you're not going to have a scholarship because we've replaced you with somebody else. That's not good.
It's not. It's just not right. Dr. Jim Phillips, Northwestern Athletic Director, with us here on 720 WGN. Go ahead, KP.
Dr. Phillips, in other college football news, NCAA members, okay, deregulation of championship games. I guess just can you explain what exactly that means and how that came about?
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about it last time, but the conference championship format was that you had to have X amount of schools, 12 schools, in order to play a conference championship. And working with the Big 12 conference and the council, the NCAA council, we were able to come up with a little bit of deregulation, but still some rules that allow a conference like the Big 12 not to have to add any new members, but to play their conference season in one of two ways. They can all 10 members can stay in one division, and you have a nine-game competitive season where every school plays everybody within the conference, and then you take the top two teams at the end of the year that finished first and second, and they play for the conference championship game and a right maybe to go to the BCS playoff. Or you take those 10 teams, divide them into two divisions equally, 5-5. You play everybody in that division, and then you play maybe three crossover games if you want. But the winner of one division, say the West, plays the winner of the other division, say East, and they have a chance to play for a spot in the BCS college football playoff. So it really works well. It's good for everybody involved, but it keeps you away from silly stuff, having a 10-member conference and then, you know, deciding team that finished first should play the team finished third because the team finished third is more healthy than the team finished second or whatever, you know, kind of scenario you can play out. It gives legitimacy to the conference championship, and really at the end of the day, it settles us down from having to think about conference expansion and let's go through that dance again and all the musical chairs that we saw happen the last time we went through the conference situation where we had movement institutionally from one league to the other.
And Jim, finally, just because you were just talking about scheduling within the conference, this fall begins the 9-game Big Ten schedule. I forget where you fell on that issue at the time, but how do you think that's going to change things at all this fall when we get into conference play?
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, I think it's good for the Big Ten. First of all, I think the fans are going to love it. It's another really competitive game on your schedule. But with the college football playoff the way it is and the strength of schedule being a factor on where teams are ranked every week for the last month of the season or so, it brings the Big Ten's strength of schedule and level of competition up. So I think it'll be good, and I know the fans will love it and the rest. And so it should be interesting. But if you can get through the Big Ten – you know, in really good shape, like several of our teams did this year, then you're going to have a chance to get into that playoff if that's where it ends up being. So it'll be positive. I think fans will like it, and And I know the kids are excited about it because instead of playing, I don't know, a team somewhere down south or out west, you have some of these rivalries. And with the conference, the way it's expanded from 10 to 11 to 12 to 14 over the course of the last 20 years, you can start building some of those rivalries by playing more conference games.
Dr. Jim, I always appreciate the time. Travel safe tomorrow. Let's see. Hopefully the Cats can get a win on the road at Iowa. Slay the Hawkeyes tomorrow afternoon. You can listen to it right here at 2 o'clock. Appreciate the time, Jim.
You got it. Always appreciate being on, you guys. Thanks for having me, and go Cats.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dr. Jim. We're going to talk to Pat Fitzgerald coming up right after the 6:30 news.
Thanks. Have a great rest of the day. Go Cats.
And from Dr. Jim Phillips to the head football coach at Northwestern, Pat Fitzgerald, joining us now on the program. It's Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen, and Kevin Powell here till 7 o'clock on 720 WGN. Hey, Coach.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you. Loud and clear.
Out in a little house league hockey game for my middle son, Ryan. So you hear some whistles. I'm not out recruiting. I'm watching some grade school hockey.
You get on the ice yourself, Coach?
Let's not insult people that can skate. Yes, I do, but not very talented in that department. I got a 7-year-old, a 9-year-old, that do circles around me, but it's fun.
Well, rec leagues need an enforcer. I mean, come on.
No. I'm smarter than I look.
Can we get a live report of the game, a scoreboard update?
It's like when I go play golf with guys, you know, we got a couple of rules. Number one, if we're doing it because you want to beat the coach, I'll just donate you my money. I want to have some fun. So
yeah.
I'm not looking to get into a rec league game and have some guy bury me in the boards just because he knocked my lips off. I've already done that in Big Ten football. I'm good.
Absolutely. All right, Coach. Well, as we get into some business here, signing day is this week. No, you can't discuss recruits until they sign the dotted line, but have you felt some momentum in the last month coming off a great 10-win season?
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. I've basically been from Chicagoland, to Atlanta, Eastern Seaboard, down to Texas, everything in between, and there's an amazing buzz about our program right now. We're excited to sign 20 guys on Wednesday, and one, Tommy Carnifax is already enrolled, so I can talk about him in the class, but the other 19 guys will sign Wednesday, and we've already got four committed for 2017. So momentum is at an all-time high, and very, very excited. I mean, you come off the heels of, the most wins in program history, and the way that we're continuing to raise the bar academically. You probably talked to Jim about the support and the facility we're building. It's just building, gaining more momentum, and just got to keep doing our part of winning games and graduating players.
Is that what you put it on, Coach, that you put up a great season like you guys had and the facilities coming in, or is there something else? I mean, is it the facilities? Is it the wins? Because you've been able to get players, in the past when you didn't have a 10-win season. How does it all add up to you, I guess?
Yeah, well, I think Northwestern sells itself if you're a young man that fits our program. Academically, I go all over the country and meet families, and the emphasis on academics is in most families, and those kind of young people fit our program, and then they get on campus, and most importantly, get around our players. I mean, our best ambassadors and best salesmen for our program are our players. It's not even close, but we believe we're the full package. We offer you a world class education, getting prepared for life, and you could argue we were about 30 minutes away from playing in Indianapolis this year. So, we're right there. We got to beat the door down now to get to Indianapolis and, win the Big Ten West. But great momentum, 18 returning starters, so to speak, including our specialists. We got a lot of positive going on right now.
So, Coach, much has been made recently about ethics in recruiting. I'm not going to name any names, but there are some other coaches in the Big Ten who have been highlighted there. You've been on record of saying you'll honor scholarships to your players who have committed, whether they're hurt or not. Can you just talk about and reiterate your philosophy in recruiting and how you guys do it at Northwestern?
Well, I kind of use the analogy of getting engaged, I don't want a young person to commit to our program until he and his family feel 100% sure that we're the right fit for them. We won't offer a kid a scholarship until we feel that way about them. And, there's a lot of different ways to do it, and I live in a glass house. I'm not here to throw stones at anybody else in our profession or in our league, but we've stood by our commitments over time, and injury or issues like that, we stick by them, and we're going to do our part to develop them to be the best they can be. And for us, we've been successful because of that. So we are who we are. We do what we do, but in no way, shape, or form am I saying that's what other people should do.
And we just had your athletic director, Dr. Jim Phillips, on. We were talking about over-recruiting and it being a problem and how prevalent it is. And he was saying that, yeah, it's incredibly prevalent and it is a problem. Do you agree?
Well, I think each institution operates basically in its own little bubble. And some schools will lose players to attrition to transfer or academic issues or, whatever it may be. And however you decide that you feel fit to what you value and who you are as an institution or program is how you go about your roster management. So there's a lot of ways to do it. There's a lot of gray. There's a ton of loopholes, but I can't do it when I'm on the golf course, but we try to play right down the middle of the fairway and just keep it simple and be as honest and as transparent as we can. And we've been able to have success and, frankly, minimize decommitments and maximize guys joining, young men joining our program that fit and end up graduating and end up having great careers. And we're very thankful for them and their families.
He's Pat Fitzgerald, the head coach at Northwestern. And look, you've been coach there now for over a decade and been doing this and seen recruiting evolve and obviously since the 90s when you were recruited to Northwestern. How has this all changed? Because it certainly seems like it has changed over the years.
Oh, social media. I mean, not even close. I mean, that and .com sites have totally changed recruiting. And some positive from that and also some obvious negatives. And, we try to do is use those avenues to educate families about our program. But, it's to me, it's really not that complicated. Try to do the right things in everything that you do. It starts with building relationships and then recruiting. And if you can get that accomplished, you can build some trust. And when your guys get in a program and you're trying hard to develop them and make them be the best they can be, they're going to play their tails off for you because you built that relationship of trust.
Coach, outside of the actual season, and obviously you've been busy with recruiting, but what is a day in the life of Coach Fitz like in late January outside of football season? Are there any off days for Coach Fitz?
No, not really. We sign scholarships on Wednesday, and it becomes husband season and dad season for a little while. But, recruiting never ends. Like I've already said, we've already got four kids committed for next year, and we'll be having juniors on campus after a bit of a break. We give our staff a week off and try to recharge a little bit. And we'll be in spring practice here in the end of February. But, it's what we choose to do. It's not a profession. It's a lifestyle. And very honored and humbled to have the role. And really looking forward to taking the next step. I'm fired up about the group we've got coming back. Very thankful for our amazing seniors. Danny Vitale today playing in the Senior Bowl and doing a great job and had a great week. I mean, there's so much positive momentum right now. Just really excited about it and just kind of can't wait to get off the road recruiting and get back with our squad. I've watched more high school teams work out than I've watched our team work out. That's recruiting. So looking forward to getting back with the guys and with our staff and building this into a championship program. We're right there at the doorstep. We just got to beat that darn door down and jump through it with everything we've got. And I know our guys will support that effort here this offseason.
Pat Fitzgerald, Northwestern's head football coach with us here, 720 WGN. What does the offseason look like for Clayton Thorson, going to be a redshirt sophomore? How does he take the next step?
Well, it already has. I get reports every day from our strength staff. And Jay Hooten was updating me here the other day that, Clayton is just really starting to come into his own as a leader, and the guys are following him. I mean, it's really been fun to listen, and I look forward to watching his maturation. And there's not very many programs in the country, and there's not very many quarterbacks in the country that can say they led their team to 10 wins in their first campaign. So the future is incredibly bright. I couldn't be more excited to see Clayton at the helm. And, I know Matt Alvitti is going to really push him. I mean, that's a great thing that we have here. We've got really solid competition at every position, and that's going to continue to propel our program in the direction that we want it to go. And the work ethic that our guys will demonstrate will obviously be the critical aspect of that. If we can get the work ethic in the right spot, we got a chance.
Pat, one more before we let you get back to your son's hockey game there.
Sounds like it's heating up.
Yeah, it sounds sounds like it's a fun one right now. But you mentioned Dan Vitale down at the Senior Bowl this week. I was able to spend some time with him down there in Mobile, and it was pretty evident during the practices and just talking to people around there that he was turning some heads, doing a little bit different things, more of a true fullback this week than you in that super back position that you guys have at Northwestern. But just curious as you kind of evaluate him and how his game is going to be tweaked a little bit going to the NFL, why that all worked? Because certainly this week he was definitely getting the job done.
Yeah, well, he was in that role somewhat in our program. And, usually what happens is a guy is a fullback in an offense and they're not sure if he can run and he can catch. It's kind of in reverse for Danny right now. Everybody knows he can run, he can catch. He's going to be a core four special teamer. They just wanted to see if he'd put his face on people as a fullback, with his hand on the ground and going and hit people. And, he's going to be better a year from now than he is right now with that role. But nonetheless, great buzz. I had so many NFL folks, scouts, and college scouting directors texting me, "Your boy 40's the real deal."
I heard a little bit of that myself this week.
Yeah, so he's got work to do. He's got the combine ahead of him. He's got his individual pro day that he'll be there with his teammates that we'll have, and I think we're close to double-digit guys who are going to get the shot to play on Sunday. So that's what it's all about, graduating from Northwestern. Multiple seniors that we have will actually graduate with their masters that they got in their fifth year, and then go give it a shot on Sunday and try to achieve your goals and your dreams. So really proud of Dan and the rest of his senior class, and just look forward to watching the process unfold.
I mean, you got so many great guys, Coach. I talked to Deontay Gibson and Matthew Harris and Travion Henry and Justin Jackson. They're just all – you really got a great bunch there. They're a pleasure to be around. Before you let you go, though, I got one thing for you that we need your help. It's been a little bit of a rough go the last couple of games for Chris Collins, and I think a Thursday night, Minnesota, we need Coach Fitz in the house bringing the juice, maybe taunting some officials. Can we get you in Welsh Ryan Arena Thursday night?
Yeah, my anticipation is that I would love to be there. Unfortunately, I'm speaking at the Ohio High School Coaches Clinic in Columbus, so recruiting never ends.
Yeah, he told you he doesn't get any days off, Carl.
Well, yeah, I think Stacy and the boys will be there, but that's at least the plan. But I'll be seeing the great high school coaches in Ohio, so no rest for the wicked. But they'll be all right. They just got to make some shots and they'll be okay. They're just going to stay the course and keep swinging, and they will. Chris and the staff are doing a great job.
No doubt. There's just nothing better than when you're in the arena yelling at Ted Valentine. That makes me feel better about life.
I didn't go to the game to watch him make calls. Let kids play. That's all I tell him. I've been watching him since I was a student athlete doing his dance. Just let the kids play, man. Let the kids play. That's all I got to say to Ted.
Showtime Teddy. That's what I call him.
Couldn't agree more. Guy gives a T to the Northwestern bench when they got up with 1 second to go shake hands. T, Teddy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Coach, you're the best. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys. All of our great Cat fans, go Cats. And enjoy signing day here in a couple days. And we'll be back. We're fired up. 10 wins. Here we go. It's rock and roll. And got a lot of work to do, but our guys are fired up. So thanks so much, guys. Appreciate everything. Go Cats, okay?
All right, Fitz. See ya.
Bye.
And I already can't wait till
he just fires you up, right? I'm ready for September 3rd, Western Michigan visits Evanston.
By the way, there it is.
I'll go lifetime contract for Fitz. And I'm sure Northwestern would too, by the way. 10% raise a year, lifetime contract.
Why didn't you run that by Dr. Jim? He was on the phone. You could have just quickly. You guys could have gotten it done right here.
I don't want to make them uncomfortable. They got enough on their plates over there.
By the way, I wrote about Dan Vitale this week and his transition to the NFL. My favorite thing that impressed me the most, because you don't hear this a lot with NFL draft prospects, he's graduating in March.
He's a great man.
I mean, a lot of these guys move to California, Florida, wherever, warmer weather, where they start training for the draft, get ready for the combine. He's up here in Northbrook at TC Boost with all the other Northwestern kids, and he's doing that in part so he can finish his degree.
When he's done playing,
he's getting ready for the draft.
He might be a fireman. It's in the family. Their schedule's tough next year. You got You got Nebraska, Western Michigan, Illinois State.
Fear the bird.
Yep, there you go. Duke, who's credible, and Nebraska all at home. Then Iowa, Michigan State, Indiana in there, and then Ohio State followed by Wisconsin.
First month at home.
It's tough, man.
Ohio State on the road. Michigan State on the road.
It's a tough 2016.
Iowa will fall back to earth, I think, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But. Maybe, but still a tough game. You're on the road. It's a monster coming up next season. But Fitz and the boys will be there.
Do we have a break here?
We do. Right. Our final break, and then we'll get you set up. Amy Guth with the Saturday Night Special, 720 WGN.
All right, boys. Wrapping things up here on the beat.
News and notes.
News and notes. I don't care about news and notes. I want to know news and notes from Mark Carmen's life. What do you got going on a Saturday night?
Anything fun for the Carm tonight on a Saturday night in the city?
It's been a very busy day, guys. I'm running on empty over here. So
I go home. Fuel up.
I think, we got a very big game tomorrow. Northwestern on the road at Iowa. I've got a halftime entertainment show that I got to focus on. So going to go home, perhaps throw in a movie or two, maybe watch some Bulls on the old DVR, get caught up for Bulls Clippers tomorrow afternoon.
Some Netflix and chill.
By the way,
we didn't get to this, but I'm glad that Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler are suddenly...
Oh, they're buddy-buddies
buddy
now.
Buddy-buddy, ready to go. They won. They beat the Lakers. Congratulations. Let's see how this is 24 hours from now.
Hey.
Carm, your thoughts, Mr. Bulls expert?
My thoughts are that doesn't surprise me. Jimmy and Derek, for the most part in their careers, remember, they've been together for 4 years. It hasn't, for 95% of that, you haven't heard a word of problem. Now, last year, things got a little dicey. And I'm not saying I'm not denying that there was issues, because there were. But they're playing together.
All right, I'm bored already.
Yeah, I'm bored with that. Enough with your love spiel.
You guys brought it up.
Kev, you're going to Iowa.
Iowa? Steve Cox.
Is that Iowa City?
It's in Des Moines.
Des Moines.
And I've never been to the state of Iowa.
Tomorrow night, what's Dave Annett's itinerary? That's what I want to know.
Dave Annett will not be out there with us. He'll be at Iowa, obviously.
He's in Iowa City.
Go Cats. He'll be back. He's just coming back after the game.
What?
Why doesn't he go to Des Moines then?
We had talked about it, but it's kind of weird. We're on like a Radio Row type thing, and the setup is very minimal, and it's kind of a stripped down set. So he'll be back here with a fully functioning studio.
So it's Dave. It's Steve and Andrea.
What state of the art studios around here, Adam?
All right.
So we'll be out there tomorrow. We're gonna go see a Trump rally. That should be fun.
I think my Bulls talk was more interesting. You are going to the Trump rally?
Trump rally tomorrow if we make it there. It starts at 6:00. So
let's bring in Amy Guth. She's a big Trump fan.
as he is a fan of mine.
what a
Amy,
guy.
Amy has a show tonight that makes me want to just stay here.
Has the beer
for the next
yet?
3 hours.
There may be beer in the house already. It's happening.
Already?
Yeah, it's happening. It's on. We're talking all about craft beer tonight. For two hours, we are talking all about the craft beer scene in Chicago. We're talking a little bit about nationwide, but then, there's so much of it here in Chicago, and there's some brewers doing such interesting things and really being creative. And what is really notable to me about for such a huge industry, it's an over $56 billion industry, it still feels very community-driven.
Do you think
that
some of these craft beers can get a little too creative? They're mixing weird flavors. It's like blueberry beer and stuff like that.
I think anything
people
could be,
like it, though.
But yeah, people like it, and I think it's really about the quality of the beer.
I love
and
craft beer.
Knowing the kind of beer that you like.
I have a rule that wherever I travel a decent amount for work, wherever I end up, I always
drink local.
I ask what the local. So I was in Mobile, Alabama this week, and I said, "What's the, give me a local." Now we're in this ridiculously boring. Well, I shouldn't say boring, but it's not a great bar. So. I don't even know if we have any local. I'm
just
like,
drop
come
the
on.
Bud Light
but
on
she
you.
Found it's called Fair Hope.
Okay.
It's like a local.
All right.
I think that's a local town there in Alabama, too. And,
Zombie
and
Dust.
That's what I drank. And it's most of the times, it's pretty good.
You know, I read a statistic in doing some research for this show that the vast majority of Americans, so they're saying about 60-ish to 70% of Americans, live within 10 miles of some type of craft brew operation. Which is kind of interesting.
They got a good Pilsner cooking up in the old green room. Amy?
We're not cooking any beer. We're not brewing it here tonight. I don't think anyone wants to drink WGN ale or anything like that.
We should start. I like that craft brewery.
Why can't you take it to the next level, Amy? You're always.
I am entrepreneurial in that way, but I don't know that I'm ready to. You know, my thing with beer is I either like very, very heavy. I like the stouts. I love Bourbon County Stout, all those really, really heavy ones. Or I like the embarrassingly awful, like the, you know.
Good PBR?
Worse. Worse. Like what they hand you at the end of a marathon, like the Michelob Ultra, right?
Like, sometimes so you do like, just need a good old Miller Lite or something like that.
It's basically water that's flavored like beer. Yeah, it's like that.
Only 100 calories, the Michelob Ultra. Outstanding flavored. Terrible beverage.
Somebody's on the take from Michelob there.
Right? Lance Armstrong over there.
The old Mickey. Oh, I knew one girl back in the day who I used to play tennis with. She just loved the Michelob Ultra because of the calorie.
I love it.
Miller Lite's only like 96 calories.
Is that right? There's
Bud 55.
I hate to do this to you, but I want to ask you this question because, I just want to know, why do you think that, the Trump phenomenon, why do you think it's happening? I want to put you on the spot and see what you come up with. Because I might have lost myself when I think about it all the time.
I blame reality television that it's brought our standards of our tolerance of watching crazy train wrecks to an all-time low, and we can't look away. And I also think people kind of laughed it off and thought, oh, he's going to go away in his own. He's going to go away in his own. This is not a real issue. And now it is. It's real. It's happening.
There's a Gallup poll out today, by the way, that he's the least popular candidate on either side. I read that and smiled myself. I really
you know,
enjoyed.
What I saw today was, you know, that the iconic Obama poster with the red and the blue and the high contrast that said hope. Someone has redone that, and it's Trump with his hair blowing every crazy direction, and it says, instead of hope, it says nope, which I rather like.
That's well done.
I'm on board with that.
That's well good. Done.
All right, well, I am actually really jealous that I can't stay here. I want to drink.
For beer 30.
I just want to drink a lot of beer. But I'm probably going to go do that anyway on my own. Thanks to Jason Hare, the director producer of 30 for 30 film, The 85 Bears. Again, that comes out on Thursday on ESPN. You can watch it. It's very, very good. Frank Schwab, NFL writer for Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner. We thank Dr. Jim Phillips and Pat Fitzgerald for joining us.